101.3, The Game. It's The Huddle. Powered in part by Buffalo Wild Wings, Burlington and Plattsburgh. Wings, beer, sports. And by Able Paint, Glass and Flooring. If you need it, they've got it. They're Able. AbleVT.com. And by Reuben James, Main Street, Burlington. Online at RJSBurlington.com. The Huddle is now on 101.3 The Game, 101.3TheGame.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 The Game app.
Good afternoon. You're in The Huddle. 101.3 The Game. All the Compton Four. Brady's here. Rich is here. Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
It's fun watching you on Twitch 7 seconds later.
I don't think that's a 7-second delay. It's like a 2-second
delay.
Yeah,
but it's just funny to watch you. It's like you go into this gyration when you let your scream out.
I've always wondered why I'm not doing more movies and TV.
I don't get it either.
It's been
one of the great mysteries of my existence on this planet.
Oh, by the way, somebody was at the movies and they said they saw us in the movies.
Good. That's because we're on our 101.3 The Game commercial.
Yes. And
oh, really?
On the big screen.
And they same said, as we've been for 3 years.
Yes. Kind of freaks them
out.
How much
I go to the movies.
Well, you went to the movies
I
recently.
I went once. Yeah. Yes.
Well, look for us at your next movie theater.
Well, we got there late, though.
Ah, yes.
I didn't get to see the previews.
I just go early just to see myself, and then I leave. I just want to see myself, and then I'm leaving after that.
It's frightening, but that actually might be a possible. That, yeah, I can see that being
up.
True.
Yeah, I just want to see our 10-second commercial, then I get up and I leave. That's it. That's all I came for.
So we've had TV ads. We've been on the side of a bus, and now we're at...
The bus was the best.
Yeah, it was.
The bus was the total best.
It was a proud moment
for me.
We've
been in the movies for all 3 years that we've been together.
Okay. That's news to me.
Look, we got a lot to get to today. We are going to play the audio from Joe Judge's intro press conference. We'll do that in just a matter of moments. But did you see this new law that they're trying to get in Montpelier right now at the State House?
Embarrassing.
Banning cell phones for anyone under the age of 21. The representative from Essex/Orleans.
Out in the kingdom, yeah.
This is his idea.
Okay, well.
He also said, by the way, I wouldn't vote for this idea. I'm just trying to start the conversation.
He should be ashamed of himself.
Another NEK whack job.
Well, here's what he says. Yeah. So it's John Rogers. That's who it is. So he says, a bill seeking to ban the use of cell phones for anyone under the age of 21 was introduced by a Democratic state senator this week, blah, blah, blah. The bill, Rogers writes that within the proposal that cell phones are a large factor in teenage driving deaths and can lead to bullying and radicalization.
That means computers could lead to bullying then. Well, that's true. I mean, they'll just find another way to do
See,
it.
That's what we need. Another thing where kids under 21 can't be held responsible, so we're taking everything away from them. I think that's just baloney. Absolutely baloney. Well, Come on now.
It's like the legislator or the city councilor or whatever it was who wanted to take guns out of the hands of the cops in Burlington. Just thinking, I don't think that's going to go very far.
I think we can all agree that not all technology is good. I think we can all agree that cell phones do many amazing things, but cell phones also can cause a lot of devastation. I think that's fair to say. At least he's not wrong when he says that cell phones are part of driving deaths, not just for teenagers, but for anybody. That cell phones do lead to things like harassment, online bullying, low self-esteem, suicide. All those things are true. However, the only thing I can wrap my head around is that you guys as parents, how would you feel about not having your kid, you're 18 years old, you're driving for the first time. Hey, let me know that you got there okay, and you can't.
Right.
I mean, that's what I would think, going back to
1970 you're driving around and you just hope the person's doing well.
And by the way, computers could have bullying the same way also. And as for driving deaths, I mean, I guess the most is alcohol, and we're not going to have prohibition again.
Well, 21, that's what he's saying. He's saying we changed cigarette laws in Vermont and alcohol to 21. This needs to be in the same thing.
No,
so,
it's not.
That's what
even,
he's saying.
Yeah, it's not even close. And you know what? The fact that we're taking more liberties away from people under 21, they could barely cope now. That's why they have so many bad coping skills, because we just take everything away from them. Let them have their phones, computers. People just because maybe it's bad in one part, they'll maneuver around it, learn life lessons from it. You can't just shelter them all the time. That's what bothers me.
You can't, but it does get depressing seeing these groups of 5 and 6 kids and not one of them is saying a word to each other. They're just walking with their heads down and staring at their phones.
That's their choice, though.
It is their choice, right. But I call me old-fashioned, but I miss conversation. You know, I really do.
Well, again, if you want to take it back to the old time, then you'd be one of the guys that say, "Oh, I'm for spanking your kids and hitting your kids." Then, right?
Oh yeah, let me tell you, I got spanked pretty good.
Again, I think we can all agree that not all technology hasn't always done good. I think there's some negatives to having cell phones. I find myself at times like, man, life is really complicated sometimes when you have all of this technology. Maybe it would have been simpler to grow up in the 50s or whatever in various ways. However, I think that as parents, you would certainly want your kids to have access to a cell phone so you know that you're okay. I don't think this is a good law. I'm just saying the conversation about whether cell phones are actually good or bad in the big picture, I think that's one that's worth at least having.
Right. I can't speak for 18-year-olds, but I mean, for me, I love my cell phone. It's great. It makes life so much easier in so many ways. I remember at first I resisted it and then finally gave in and got a flip phone.
Yeah.
Had that for 3 or 4 years and couldn't take all the abuse I was taking for having a flip phone. And once I got the, what's it called? iPhone.
Yeah.
This thing right here.
Yeah, that one. That's an iPhone.
It opens up a whole new world. You know, I mean, if you use it for good, it's an amazing tool.
A nice world of online gambling.
Yeah, that went well.
Just because I may have, or other people may have something against cell phones or the problems they have, don't use your insecurities for other people. Let other people decide. We don't make decisions like that. That's why we're, you know, a democratic society. That's why we get to choose on what we think is good and what we don't think is good. And, you know, we make our own decisions here in America. That's what I love. So I'm totally against. I think this is ridiculous.
Right, there's us talking politics and policy changes for the day.
Maybe I should do politics. Maybe I should do that.
That was our January stab at politics.
Yeah, so there we go.
We'll be back right after Groundhog Day for February's edition.
Wow. Yeah,
we'll try that.
Get right at it, Brady. What's going on?
We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/1013thegame. Give us a like. Give us a follow. You'll get a notification every single time that we go live. We're learning a little bit more maybe about Joe Judge's staff in New York. We'll talk about that. Former Major League pitcher who spent some time with the Red Sox, Dan Wheeler, is going to drop in at 4:40. Bob Soucy for one last time, voice of the Patriots, at 5 o'clock. And why doesn't Drew Brees get the same grief that Tom Brady does? But first, Joe Judge's intro press conference question and answer session in New York as the head coach of the Giants. His press conference has just concluded moments ago. What we've done is we've got the 5 minutes of his opening statement that he gave just about a half hour ago, so we're going to play that in full so you won't hear us. 5 minutes, Joe Judge talking to the organization, to the fans, to the players for the first time.
There's a question out there I'm sure a lot of people are asking. That's number one, who am I? Well, maybe I can explain that a little bit better, but instead of saying who am I, by telling you what's relevant in this conversation with being a coach of the New York Giants, what I'm about. And what I'm about is an old school physical mentality, okay? We're going to put a product on the field that the people of this city and region will be proud of, because this team will represent this area. We will play fast. We'll play downhill. We'll play aggressive. We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes. We'll play every play like it is a history and a life of its own with a relentless competitive attitude. We'll play fundamentally sound. We will not beat ourselves. That is our mission right here. Okay? I'm about caring for the players in the locker room. Let's not forget there's a human element to this game. Let's not think that in professional sports that paying a paycheck to somebody makes it absent of empathy. We need to make sure that we take care of the players in our locker room, that we treat them the right way, that we teach them the correct techniques, and that we put them in the right situation to be successful. We're going to ask these men to come in and give everything they have every day. We're going to demand it. And we appreciate everything they give us. It's our responsibility to take care of them on a daily basis and make sure when they are done with our game, they are better furthered for the rest of their career as a father, a husband, and a professional, whatever avenue they take. Now, what this team's going to look like, I mentioned earlier, I want this team to reflect this area. I want the people that pay their hard-earned money in the neighborhoods of New York, North Jersey, South Jersey to come to our games and know that the players on the field play with the same attitude they wake up with every morning. That is blue collar. It's hard work. It's in your face. We're not going to back down from anybody. We're going to come to work every day and grind it out the way they do in their jobs every day. And they can invest their money in our program knowing it's worthwhile. They put a Giants uniform on, they put a Giants hat or jersey on, that it's not representing just the 53 on the field, but it's representing their neighborhoods, their communities, and their families with the values they have instilled in their children. Now, at this moment, my priorities are pretty simple. I have an outsider's view of this team. I've competed against the Giants. I've studied this team from the outside looking in, preparing myself for this job and opportunity. But I have to make myself fluent in the language within the building. I have to study the players. I have to evaluate the current coaching staff and give everybody a fair evaluation to make sure we make the right decisions, that I have a clear vision of what the path going forward needs to be to help these players progress the correct way. Relative to staff, I do not have a staff in place. Yes, I have some names in mind, but we will talk to everybody. We will take our time. My priority is to put the right men around these players that they can come to work every day, they can be coached hard, they can be taught. I want good people. Before anything, if you're going to work in an organization, you're a good person. I don't want any alternative agendas. I'm making that clear right now. There's not going to be a coach in our organization who has nothing but the best interest of the players at hand and isn't going to come to work every day and put their butt on the line for the guys who are going to work hard for them. All right? And I want teachers, not presenters. I don't want someone who looks fancy in front of a screen and can sell you with a lot of different sales lines. I want teachers. I want old school people who can get to our players and give them the mental image of what it's supposed to look like. And I want them to demonstrate on a daily basis the work ethic of what it's going to take to do it successfully day in and day out. Because over the course of 6 months of this season, it takes day in and day out to be successful. The margins of error in this league are too small. You cannot get by with some kind of magic scheme or new gimmick or think you've reinvented the wheel. The same things win football games that have always won football games. It's fundamentals. And those fundamentals will start for us in the classroom. They'll start with being in meetings on time. They'll start with being on the field on time in the proper dress. They'll start with knowing your playbook. They'll start with being out there and stretching the right way and warming your body up the right way that you prevent any kind of soft tissue injuries on the field. And then they're carry over to the fundamentals on the field. It's running, it's tackling, it's ball security, okay? It's a contact sport. You can't get around that. It's meant to be a physical game. It's for tough people. We will practice with a physical attitude. We will practice in pads. We will practice live tackling. Not to make a statement that we're trying to be tough. We're going to practice live tackling because I believe in doing it safely. You want to make your players safer? You start by instructing them how to do it. And we're going to work on everything we do. And everything we ask them to do at full speed on Sunday at a competitive level, we're going to make sure that we have practiced, corrected, and repracticed before they have to do it at a live pace. Okay? There's not going to be shortcuts to what we have to do. It's a tough division. It's a tough division in cities full of tough people. And they expect to see a program. They expect to see a product that represents them. And I'm going to do everything in my power every day to make sure the people of this city and this area turn on the TV or sit in the stadium seats and are proud to say that we're their New York Giants.
So that was Joe Judge.
Let's
do
it!
I'm ready to run through a wall. I'm a Giants fan.
Break! Let's go!
Well, that was Joe Judge's intro statement at the press conference.
Let's go. Week one.
802-655-6672. How did you feel about it? We've had speculation on what Joe Judge would sound like, what his message would be. Now you know what it is. We'll take your reaction on the text line. Arnie, I'll just start with you as the Giants fan in the room. How did you feel about it?
No, it was good. He said all the right things. He laid it out on the line, what he wants to do. They'll take their time hiring their coaches. He has the good attitude. I like that type of attitude. I'm just wondering if he's going to have the same attitude and the same calmness when the media starts barraging him with questions like, why did you go for it on 4th and 7 when you had a timeout? Or, when he starts getting questions, bombarding him for doing something stupid, if he's going to have still that attitude. But I mean, I like what I heard there in the 5 minutes.
No, I liked it too. I like him talking about, he just sounds like a guy you'd run through the wall with. I've already seen a couple of people use that exact term on Twitter. A couple of guys from the media were sort of making fun of it in a positive way, just saying, let's kick the ball off. When does the season start? Blah, blah, blah. I loved his articulateness. Is that a word?
Close enough.
I love how articulate he is.
Yes. I mean, I don't think I heard in a single word once in 5 minutes. A lot of, all right. But he's just trying to slow things down a little bit to make his point. He said all the right things about, we're going to make this happen for Jersey, North and South, and for New York City.
What happened to Connecticut?
Really? Yeah, be careful when you go geographical.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you'll always leave something out. I liked what he said about no shortcuts. I mean, he was just balls to the wall right there without sounding like he was balls to the wall.
You can definitely tell he's old school. For you Giant fans that have wanted a return to Tom Coughlin, kind of the dictatorship of Tom Coughlin, that's what you're getting here with Joe Judge. And the reason, look, I loved it. And the reason why I loved it is, as I've said all week, I think that kind of personality and that kind of demanding nature would grade on players if you were somebody that was just working with the offense or the defense. I don't know that guys can take that for 6 months directly in their face, but as someone who's an overseer who can delegate to his coordinators, I think is just an overarching presence in the organization. That is what the Giants need.
You know, you compared yesterday. You said yesterday also that you compared him to Coughlin. I don't think that he's compared to Coughlin. I'd have to come up with somebody else because I don't think Coughlin rubbed me the wrong way. Whether successful or not, I'm not talking about. He wasn't fair.
He didn't seem.
He wasn't
nice.
Fair.
He seemed like an angry guy to
me. Even with the 5 minutes, I think this guy will be fair. He'll tell you the hard things he'll have to tell you to your face. I don't think Coughlin was a fair guy. I don't know that for a fact. But
well, whatever he did, it worked.
Well, that's beside the point, though. He also came off as a very unlikable guy, and maybe that's the difference.
Well, Joe Judge is 38. Coughlin was almost 70 by the time he was done. So I think there's a difference between Joe Judge, who, and one of our texters says it, it's kind of a mix of old and new school. He's clearly old school in his values, but I think the way he presents things, he could do in a little bit more articulate way, as you said, than a guy like Coughlin,
right,
who, look, was very, very rigid by the time he was out in New York.
That's true, too. Yeah, he was, but like I said, there was something about him. His attitude was like more like my way or the highway. Maybe Joe Judge is like that too, but I think he's more fair and we'll discuss it with you. Not this whole, you're 4 minutes late because the clock is 5 minutes late. Get the hell out of here, you know?
I was impressed. And as a Patriots guy, I've never heard of the guy. I mean, we were kind of kidding about the fact that he said Joe Judge has been named Giants coach the other day. I said, who the hell is Joe Judge? He's been with the Patriots for 8 years. A guy that articulate and that impressive. I've never heard of him, and I don't think I'm alone in that.
Derek in St. Albans said that attitude doesn't work anymore.
I don't think it would work if you were somebody who was, again, if you were working with one side of the ball and that is your attitude and you're working with the same group of players, you know, if that, I think that would wear on Daniel Jones if it was just Joe Judge and Daniel Jones every single day with that.
Maybe.
However,
that,
as the overseer, I think it works.
Do you think that would work with Tom Brady, a guy getting to, or Ben Roethlisberger, or?
No, I don't. And
that's where flexibility is going to be important in his way.
The things that I loved about what Joe Judge said, I love that he said he wants teachers, not presenters. He's focusing on accountability, toughness, and he's focusing on the little details. And that's what we've heard about him. It's been consistent with everything we've heard, that he's detail-oriented. So when he talks about having teachers and not just people who present information, I think that's really important because he clearly wants to teach fundamentals. He preached accountability. He also talked about the human element. That's the one thing I think that Gettleman has lacked in the front office here, is that, you know, I don't think the issues that happened last year with Landon Collins would happen under Joe Judge. I think whether you like his message or not, he's going to give you the message, and I appreciate the honesty there. The one thing that's going to be the biggest issue for him is he has to immediately, the first thing he needs to do is get to his veteran players. And the Giants team is relatively young, but there are veterans on this roster, and Golden Tate is one of them, who's a Super Bowl champion, who's been in the league for a long time. You cannot implement a new program if your veterans are not going to buy in.
Yep.
The young players, the rookies, the guys who are hungry, who are looking to make a roster, who are looking to get a contract, they will always buy in because they're looking for guidance here to get to the next level. Golden Tate's won a Super Bowl. He's got the $60 million contract, okay, the $50 million contract. He's played in playoff games before. He might not want to practice in full pads. You have to be able to get through to the veteran presence on this team and let it trickle down that way, because if you end up with a split locker room between the young guys who are all in and the old guys who are like, no. That was when I was 21, not when I'm 31. That's where there's a problem.
Are you really going to get 60 plus in the practice squad and all those guys to agree on? There's always going to be a few rogue guys that are complaining, ones that don't get to play, ones that are backups, ones that are second string that think they should be playing. You're always going to have somebody that's unhappy. Right. So if Golden Tate was upset about what was going on and I was the coach, I'd say, take a hike. We're going to deal you in and we'll get somebody else in here.
But every team has those kind of guys. You know, I think you get that on every single team. And I like the fact that Joe Judge seems like a guy who's going to be able to handle that situation. I mean, how many times do you say old school, physical mentality, reflect the area, blue collar, all that stuff?
He'd be good for Baker Mayfield. Actually, that's the kind of attitude that Baker Mayfield needs coaching him, is that type of old school attitude.
Well, I'll tell you who was probably happy about that speech was Wade Phillips. I mean, he's like, hey, here I am. I'm an old school guy. Let's go.
I know there's people on hold. So 802-655-6672. Brady, who's first up?
Ben in South Burlington.
Ben in South Burlington. Good afternoon. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game. What's going on, Ben?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Ben. What's up?
Hey, Ben.
So, Judge, special teams coach, you know, for the Patriots, when he was there, especially this year, I think the special teams was probably the best side of the ball for the whole team. The offense and defense were inconsistent. So the fact that he's worked with both types of players, I think, is a positive for the Giants. However, on the other hand, you know, we're dealing with David Gettleman, who's a wild card of a GM, who, you know, drafted Daniel Jones, but then, you know, the cornerback that they drafted last year was a total bust. And that's going to happen every draft. You're not going to, you know, hit a home run on every pick. But, you know, also, you know, the team gutted some of, you know, in the past 3 years, gutted some of their best players to, you know, not get really any good players in return, or they didn't turn out to be very good when they came to the Giants.
Right, right.
So, you know, Judge can do whatever he wants, but I think it's really a determinant on what Gettleman does this offseason with free agency in the draft.
You know, I was going to say something. You know, he could say how he's all into it, but he got the job. And I'm sure they asked him what he thinks about the quarterback. Suppose he really didn't like the quarterback. Suppose he doesn't like Daniel Jones. He doesn't really have much of a choice now, does he? He has to live in that house, Brady, without painting the walls. He's got to take Daniel Jones whether you like him or not.
I understand that. No, yeah. You're absolutely right about that. And this is going to test and prove a lot about Dave Gettleman. I know a lot of Giants fans have already made their determination on Gettleman, but Gettleman is going to have to make this work. I mean, he's going to have to adapt himself a little bit here, because we had heard that maybe some of the things that were going to scare off candidates in New York was Gettleman's overarching desire to run the entire roster, and could he really collaborate with a head coach? Well, look, Daniel Jones and Joe Judge are his babies. Now, he's already failed on Shurmur. So, or, you know, he failed because he had to fire him. So he failed on Shurmur. So he needs Jones and Judge to work. So if Gettleman in the past has been this stodgy old guy in the corner office who, I make all the decisions, you coach the team, well, he's going to have to adapt some of his mentality here. He's also going to have to get a little bit more new school, a little bit more collaborative, and allow, what's the famous Parcells line? They want me to cook the meal. Yeah, they could at least allow me to shop for the groceries.
That's right. That's right.
There's going to have to be some of that as well. I don't expect Joe Judge at 38 and a first-time head coach to come in here and run the organization like Belichick. I want Gettleman involved, but they can't be either way. Can't be a totalitarian system.
Todd says, impressed with the speech, but what matters is the product they put on the field. Matt Patricia sounded great in his opening press conference, too. It's one thing to say all the right things, quite another to implement it. That is from Todd. Well, all the decisions won't be him. Don't think that he's calling all the shots. Obviously, there'll be a group of players, contracts decide, you know, which one of those players are going to make the team. You know, we know that.
He sounded very collegiate to me. That was the impression I got of Joe Judge. Not that he's somehow not qualified for the Giants job, because I've told you all week I'd like to hire, but he sounded like he kept using the words "our program." When I hear "our program," I think of college. And he talked about, you know, we're going to do things old school. Again, 18-year-olds in college, they buy into all that stuff because they know nothing else. His biggest challenge will be, how can he get the veteran players, the guys who have the second contract, the guys who are going for their big contract, how can he get them to buy in as well? I believe that Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, that they're sponges who want to learn. I believe that he will have their unconditional support, but can he get the support of a Tate? Now, I know he's gone, but could he have reached Janoris Jenkins in a way that Pat Shurmur couldn't last year? Those are the things that I want to see.
I will say one thing, because they also said Adam Gase was the big genius, too. He was the genius before this guy was the genius. If I lined up him and Gase together and had a five-minute conversation on the weather, just based on that, I would know that I would hire Joe Judge over Adam Gase just based on his look. There's something made right about Gase. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we'll see how it works out on the field, like they say, but he certainly had a good opening press conference.
He did, and again, he came out of nowhere. Nobody had even heard of the guy, and it was interesting because John Mara, who's seen a lot of guys come through his office over the years, said this was perhaps the best coach interview I have ever been a part of. Joe is someone who had been on our radar the last couple of years, but it sounds like he had no idea. I guess he blew him away, pretty much.
And Judge said, look, this wasn't my plan this year. It wasn't like I have to be a head coach. He just said, it just so happened that it came out this way and that it worked out for him. But it wasn't something that he had been necessarily saying, okay, this is my drop-dead date. I must be a head coach in this offseason.
802-655-6672, off and running on this Thursday. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Joe Judge says he doesn't know who's going to be on his staff yet. All but right. We're hearing some rumors about people who might get on that staff.
Right, we'll get to that next. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game.
The Huddle. Arnie.
No doubt I look like I'm 35. I look younger than everybody here.
Rich.
The light on the top of Arnie's head is a distraction.
Brady.
Oh, I see what that is. That's the Twitch stream talking to me in the background because I was playing Twitch there. So now I got to mute this. There's a lot of stuff. What?
It's The Huddle on 101.3 The Game.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game on this Thursday. Do I say it's a beautiful Thursday? It's a great Thursday?
It's gorgeous out. It's a picture postcard winter
like
day.
It's like 18 degrees or something.
It's
like
beautiful.
That.
Ugh.
It's a bit chilly, isn't it?
Oh, stop. It's winter. You choose to live here. Get over it.
I don't need it to be 12 degrees.
Well, you're
Can
lucky.
Can we keep it above 30?
Well, maybe by next week it'll be minus 12.
Actually, this has been since I moved here, this has been the mildest winter so far.
We haven't had anything. Although we did. We've had winter. We've had quite a bit of snow.
We have not.
In November.
It was freezing in November for a week where it was like zero.
Yeah, we had.
Every day.
We had winter start early and then it stopped once the new year came.
I don't remember being zero in November.
It was. Because you were going out there complaining every day, going out to your car to warm it up.
Was it that cold?
Jeez. Yes.
Yeah,
and
we
then,
were down around zero for a few days at least.
It's supposed to be a weird weekend. It's supposed to be like 50 tomorrow, 50 and rainy, and then Sunday it's supposed to be, or no, Saturday it's supposed to be 50 and rainy, and then Sunday it's supposed to be snowing and wintry mix and miserable.
Next week we're snow.
I've been asking this question on this show every day, well, about once a week for 10 years or whatever we've been on. Would you prefer what we're going to get Saturday? 50 degrees, rainy and gloomy. Or today, 15 and sunny and beautiful.
Nah, give me the 50.
That's insane.
Yeah, give me the 50.
What's wrong with you?
Give me the 50.
This is a beautiful day.
I'll take the 50.
Dress for it.
Give me the 50. I can't be too cold. I'll throw my back out when it's too cold.
I
start to shiver and I get all contracted and then I throw my back out.
I get contracted.
Yeah.
I don't even want to know what that means.
It's a whole medical term. I don't want to get into it. Ugh. Brady, get to the mistake of the day. Go ahead.
Mistake of the day, 802-655-6672. Thanks to Embroidery Works, Joann's Uniforms, Heineberg Drive in Colchester, now carrying a full line of tactical apparel and gear for EMS workers, first responders, law enforcement, and fire and rescue from high-quality lines like TruSpec and Cougar. Tactical, great quality and selection at 20% off every day. We agree that Joe Judge won the intro press conference in New York. He has said he doesn't know who his staff is going to be yet. Well, we're hearing some rumblings that Freddie Kitchens could be a part of that staff. Freddie Kitchens, former Browns head coach, was fired there after 1 year. Jordan Ronan of ESPN says Kitchens could get a look. There is a connection there. Both Judge and Kitchens worked together at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
So there's at least a logical tie in there in that they know each other. So how would you feel about Freddie Kitchens being on staff?
Is it wrong for me to feel like I don't want him on staff because of the overall failure he was in Cleveland? And maybe that's not fair because maybe he'd be a great offensive coordinator. I can't tell because my judgment's so clouded because of the horrible job that he did in Cleveland. I feel like this guy couldn't do a good job selling ice cream out of the ice cream truck in the summer.
Serving you breadsticks.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be like that because Wade Phillips was fired from the Cowboys and did a great job defensive coordinator for the Rams. And there's a lot of people that lose their job as head coaches that go on to do well as a coordinator, but he was just such a failure as a head coach. I don't know if I really want him around.
Feels like Josh McDaniels a little bit after his Denver experience, and you start to think, maybe he just belongs as an assistant coach somewhere. That's exactly what I was going to say, Arnie. I mean, you look at and you wonder if Giants fans want Freddie Kitchens. We heard so many things about his difficulty having a good relationship with the star players, the marquee names on that Cleveland Browns team. Do you really, as a Giants fan, want him coming in? and messing around with some of these young guys. It feels like kind of a volatile mix because, as you said, Brady, before, Judge himself is a gamble as far as the mix with the youngsters, potentially.
And I was going to say, how did Freddie Kitchens do with Baker Mayfield? You know,
yeah, but I mean, is what, Daniel Jones that much of a...
But they're both young quarterbacks. Well, how did you deal with that? You dealt with a young quarterback that didn't seem to go too well? Yeah. How are you going to deal with this young quarterback?
Doesn't Baker Mayfield seem a lot less teachable than Daniel Jones?
Yes, he does, but you still have to, you don't have to consider that, how he deals...
Look at the names right now that the Giants have in comparison to what the Cleveland Browns had. Okay, that was a lot of pressure in a volatile situation for Freddie Kitchens. Okay, you have... high draft pick in Mayfield, high draft pick in Nick Chubb. You've got high price players in Jarvis Landry, high price player in Odell Beckham, and a lot of expectations. Right now, when we talk about the Giants, that quartet is a lot different than Daniel Jones, Darius Slayton, Russell Shepard.
But still, high expectations.
A lot of divas.
Giant fans will have the same expectations of going to the playoffs just like anybody else has.
But the Browns were talking about winning the Super Bowl, okay? Yeah. I don't think Giants fans are going to be delusional enough to think they're going to win the Super Bowl. And you forget... because of the bad taste of 2019 for the Browns, just how good Freddie Kitchens was in 2018 when he took over as the Browns offensive coordinator. This is my new narrative for this offseason, okay? When you are not charged with doing everything in the organization, you have an opportunity for better success. When Freddie Kitchens was just the OC in Cleveland, he resonated well with Baker Mayfield. He resonated well with Jarvis Landry. He incorporated Nick Chubb and Duke Johnson and David Njoku and these other weapons that Cleveland had. Last year, they were so focused on, let's get the ball to OBJ, let's get the ball to Landry, that a lot of the diversity that they had in 2018 kind of went away. The Giants don't have that same kind of power structure offensively, and Daniel Jones is more teachable than Mayfield. Look, if this happens, and we don't know yet what the role would be, whether Kitchens would be the quarterback's coach, the offensive coordinator, we're not sure, but I could see a situation where Freddie Kitchens is successful in New York.
I would rather have Jason Garrett, 10 years head coaching experience for the Dallas Cowboys, played quarterback. Doesn't that sometime come into effect here when you have a guy that actually has played the position? I mean, doesn't that mean something even though he's played on some horrible teams in college? What did he play for? Princeton, I believe it was, or something like that?
Well, that's the thing. If you put the two of them, you know, Kitchens, you know, and
Joe Judge. Joe,
no, I'm talking about who you just mentioned.
Oh, Garrett.
Jason Garrett. I mean, is that sort of the same thing, really? They're coming off of...
Garrett has 10 years experience as head coach.
I understand that, but aren't they coming off of a situation where they were supposed to make the playoffs and be good, not only make the playoffs, but potentially be good 10-6, 11-5-ish kind of teams that failed miserably?
Look, I like Jason Garrett, and I would be fine if he was involved as well. But that being said, what's the biggest... complaint from Cowboys fans about Garrett that his play calling is predictable, it's too vanilla, etc., and that when he was truly the offensive coordinator there was calling the plays before Kellen Moore was, that they were too predictable on offense. Freddie Kitchens is anything but predictable. He's got a lot of advanced concepts, things like that, and things that can get his players out in space. I think there could be some real creativity if Freddie Kitchens was with the Giants. And again, Daniel Jones is a far different personality than Baker Mayfield, so I could see Daniel Jones being really receptive to coaching. And Austin Gale of Pro Football Focus has told us Kitchens is a very interesting play caller.
Keep in mind, too, Kitchens played quarterback at Alabama.
I forgot about that. Thank you. Panther fan here, not too familiar with Matt Rhule. I kind of like him. I thought he also... is another guy I would have considered, but you know that was from the college ranks
Right, and I'm basing that completely on the amount of demand on that guy. I mean, I'd never heard of Matt Rhule because I don't follow college football that much, but at the same time, it seemed like all of a sudden, over about a two-week period, every NFL team wanted him. And the fact that the Panthers aggressively went out, courted him, met him, and signed him to a long-term deal immediately seems, on paper, very impressive.
I guess there's something in the contract that other owners aren't happy about. Tepper's a multi... That guy might be one of the richest guys in the world. I'm not kidding around about that. So his money certainly is expendable. He doesn't give a damn about that. He'll just spend it like crazy. 802-655-6672 if you want to go ahead and get on in.
And more on Judge's potential staff. We're now hearing rumors that Patriots defensive line coach Brett Bielema could come over to coach with the Giants as well. Look... Bielema has been a college head coach before. He did it at Wisconsin. He's done it at Arkansas. He's been a defensive line coach this year in New England. Belichick doesn't like taking staff members. He's made that very clear, and I understand that. I understand that when you stick your neck out for somebody, you don't think it's appropriate that they go and then ransack your entire staff. But I would hope Belichick would be okay with this because Bielema, I mean, Belichick's son is ahead of him on the defensive staff.
I was just about to ask you, what happens if the Cowboys said, we want to hire your son as head coach? When he said, I don't want you taking anybody but my mother. He would shut his damn mouth. I know, but I'm just
what an interesting dilemma that would be.
I mean, Belichick's son is ahead of Bielema on the defensive staff, and so is Gerard Mayo. So, I mean, Bielema's kind of locked in here in New England. I would hope that if Joe Judge is going to give him a promotion, I would hope Belichick would be okay with that.
I always said that's very... terrible of somebody to hold somebody back from a promotion if you're not going to give it to them. We talked about that with the Patriots, Casario, whoever it was.
Nick Casario.
Yeah, we said, hey, if you're not going to make him GM and somebody else wants to make him GM, there's no reason to stand in somebody's way like that. I find that horrible.
Well, we'll see what happens here, but Jordan Ron out of ESPN, he's the guy reporting all of these things as possibilities. And Joe Judge, for what it's worth, he did say, I will give everybody already in the organization a fair shake. So we'll see what happens. You know, it had been Mike Shula, who was the offensive coordinator under Pat Shurmur. So again, even though he wasn't tasked with doing play calling, he's a guy who had been there as well. So we'll see exactly what happens.
Isaac said Dartmouth College.
Really?
Yep.
What was Dartmouth College?
Mike Shula.
Oh.
I think. Now I have to look it up.
Isaac said there's a report from a rival NFC South coach complained that Rule getting all that money was driving the cost up of a coach. Yeah, well, they're going up anyway. And yeah, he's getting paid... was it like $11 million a year or something like that? He may be getting what Belichick is getting.
Never mind. It must have been Dave Shula.
Well, okay.
Mike Shula went to Alabama. Yes. On to the next topic.
Thank you.
All right. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
They said what? Same as every day at this time.
That's next. You're in the huddle. What a 1 point to the game.
Whoa, 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 whoa. What did he say? He really said that? It's They Said What?
What?
On the huddle.
What?
Yeah.
What?
On 101.3 The Game.
Three and a half years of doing this show, you think my brother would stop calling me during the show. I'm like, do you not know that from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern, noon to 3 your time, I'm not going to answer the phone. I'm working. After three and a half years, you'd know when to call me, when not to call me.
And the best part is he calls for absolutely no
nothing,
reason.
Yeah,
nothing. I've heard your conversations. Yeah. It's just nothing but endless F-bombs about nothing.
In his defense, for a year and a half of those 3.5 years, we were... Or actually, for 2 years, we were only on from 4 till 6.
Well, that's true.
So
that's true.
He's only an hour and a half behind schedule.
I mean,
a year and a half behind.
And he always calls me when I'm at Orange Theory too. I'm like, come on, dude. You know, between 10:15 and 11:15 my time, I'm at Orange Theory.
Right.
Leave
you can't
alone.
Talk because you're walking.
I'm doing whatever. Jeez. Get with it.
Arnie's just sauntering along the treadmill.
Exactly.
He was so proud today because his class ran further than mine did. He didn't run one step.
I'm in the advanced class, I think. They pushed us a little bit harder than your class.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I think that's true.
Not today.
You're in the loud class.
Yeah.
You are.
A couple of the loud people weren't there today. They're taking some time off.
Pleasant.
I guess. Let's get to They Said What.
They Said What?
Interesting topic on the Herd, noon to 3 every day, and one I've been thinking about, too. We're all obviously interested in what's happening with Tom Brady's future, okay? But Tom Brady's getting crushed nationally for being 42 years old and being over the hill. Why isn't Drew Brees getting crushed nationally? Here's a guy who's 40, who plays indoors, has a great head coach, has great personnel around him that Brady doesn't. Why is he not getting crushed nationally in the way that Brady is? Colin has a theory on that.
Likeability matters. I think it's easy not to like Brady. Deflategate, he's won so much. Giselle, the supermodel wife. There's the evil empire, the Darth Vader of the Patriots, right? Meanwhile, Drew Brees is the most likable guy in the world. He could have bolted after Katrina. He kind of saved the franchise. The Saints were a losing team. But I just want to remind you of something. If Tom Brady would have missed 5 games this year and the Patriots went 5-0, you'd be reminding me every 15 minutes. If Tom Brady had Jared Cook, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, Sean Payton, and that offensive line, you think they'd struggle to move the ball? We need to be fair. All I ever hear about is Brady's age. Okay, Brees is 18 months younger, so I'm just saying, let's be fair about this.
Okay, so...
That's 18 months younger.
Yeah, he's 40 years old. Brady's 42, so... Do you think it's fair that Breeze doesn't get the same criticism that Brady does?
He doesn't get the same criticism, but Colin's just reading stuff off. I don't know if all of it's the reasons why he gets a pass for that. I don't think not leaving after Katrina has anything to do with it.
I see he got there right before Katrina.
I know, but Colin's just listing stats whether he believes it or not, whether you know he just whether they're just true. But that doesn't mean that's you know why we're not hammering him. Also, because it's not a high-profile franchise. Like the Patriots are. And three, people think that they kind of got the royal right. Blank job by the referees right. over the last year.
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. So, again, that's another reason to give him a little bit of a pass there also. I think all that has to
play. Look, the guy's a choir boy, too. Has he ever said anything wrong in his life? I feel like Tom Brady can be that way, too. But there's always the stigma, as silly as it is, about Deflategate. And I think people just tend to be more jealous of somebody who has the life that Tom Brady has, not to mention the 6 Super Bowl championships. I mean, don't forget, New Orleans did win a Super Bowl with Drew Brees at the helm. People tend to forget that. But I think Arnie's right to a point in which I think people feel sorry for the Saints because they've been so screwed the last 2 years.
I don't think that has anything to do with it, actually. I think Colin's pretty close to dead on with this. The likability factor does matter here. The other part of it is that we as a society embrace underdogs. We don't love favorites that much, okay? And Brady is the guy, again, to Colin's point, has the supermodel wife, has this great life, has all the money, all the endorsements, has went to Michigan, so he was kind of bred for this position. Now, I know he was a 6th-round pick, but everything else in his lineage tells you that Brady should be good. Breeze, on the other hand, had to go to Purdue, a nothing college football program, is undersized. He's always the prototype for what we say about undersized quarterbacks being under 6 feet. The Chargers didn't want him, so he's got that comeback story narrative of him coming back from the shoulder injury, getting to New Orleans, taking over a team that had been no good, taking over a city that had been ravaged. Breeze has this underdog quality that we embrace in society, and because Breeze has only won the 1 Super Bowl, he can still have that underdog card to him.
No, maybe it's the birthmark. They feel sorry for
that
him.
That was the best thing I ever saw on television.
What?
When Drew Brees was on with Oprah, and Oprah was bringing him out. Obviously, Oprah didn't even meet him before she brought him out. And she took her thumb, licked her thumb,
right.
and
that.
Tried to rub off the birthmark.
Oh, my.
Because she thought it was like he was eating something and it just happened. And he goes, no, it's a birthmark. Because nobody on her staff told him he's got a big birthmark on the side of his face. No, Brady, I think you're just kind of listing some stuff off, you know, to try to make him more likable. Yeah, he is a little bit more likable, but, you know, some of the stuff.
You don't think the fact that Drew Brees is 5'11" and has had to overcome a shoulder injury that cost him a whole season, a franchise in San Diego that didn't want him to replace him with Phillip Rivers, and then went to New Orleans. You don't think it matters?
I don't even know if most average fans know how tall Drew Brees is, whether he's 5'11", 5'10", or 6'2". I don't think that's he's been so successful for so long. I don't think his height comes into play.
I remember was it a Monday night game about a month ago? Drew Brees has just thrown the most touchdowns in NFL history. I thought, there's a guy who just, I mean, everyone knows who Drew Brees is. He's the face of the Saints and has been forever, but not really. Who are the greatest quarterbacks in the last 20 years? Drew Brees isn't the first one that pops into your head.
You bring up the Purdue thing, but yeah, Brady was kind of an underdog coming out of Michigan because he was like a third stringer at one point on that team. So I see Brady as a big underdog also. That's why I like him.
He's no longer a big underdog.
No, but I mean when he came into the NFL.
Brees has continued to have that underdog card. And I disagree, Arnie. I think it's well established that Drew Brees is short.
It's established, but I don't think people are saying 5'11 and a half. I don't think
the average
like Flutie short. I mean, all they ever talked about with Flutie was that, that's the short quarterback from BC.
I think average fans know absolutely. The average fan is smarter than you give them credit for. I mean, I think the average fan knows Drew Brees is small and undersized, Russell Wilson small and undersized, and Kyler Murray is small and undersized. And all three of them are trying to break the mold and reinvent the position.
I don't root for Russell Wilson because he's short and undersized. I don't root for anybody because of their height, except for Taco Fall. So that's pretty much it there. Matt says Brady comes off as smug, largely due to his success. And a lot of people don't like the handsome, smiling guy. You also said because he has a supermodel wife. I've seen Drew Brees' wife. They're all supermodels. I think it's the only difference is Giselle makes a lot more money than everybody else's supermodel wife. It's not that they're all good looking. It's Giselle's good looking and makes tons of money. That's the difference.
And the other thing, too, is that Brady, and this is the first time Texter makes the point, Brady gets crushed because we've had to listen to the Pats fans rub it in our faces for the last 20 years. I mean, Brady has been at the helm of a team that a lot of people have come to dislike, who they didn't even care about before Brady arrived.
That's another good point. We've been had so much of Tom Brady over the last, nine Super Bowls,
right,
6-1-3. Yeah.
Every year.
And you also say about Breeze, Rich, I think you were kind of getting to this point. We've always placed him behind Brady, Manning, and Rodgers.
Yep.
We've always placed those three on the pedestal. So Breeze is always, for as good as he is, has always felt like he's belonged in that second tier. Whether that's true or not, in public eye, he's always been placed behind Brady, Manning, and Brady, Manning, and Aaron Rodgers. Yep. So I've never had the expectation that Drew Brees should have 6 Super Bowls. I've never had the expectation that he should have more than he has. So it's never really, I've never looked at him as a massive failure because I look at him exactly how I think the rest of society places him, as not as good as Brady or Rodgers. And again, I don't know that that's true, but I think in our subconscious, we just place him below those guys.
George's fans definitely know how short he is. It's common knowledge. I have to say, as someone who could care less about the Saints' success, I feel a little bit sorry for them after the last few years. Another reason why we brought that up. That's another reason why.
Right. Who cares about the New Orleans Saints in generally in America? I mean, you don't see a lot of Saints fans around. They were always horrible. They were worse than the Patriots when I was growing up, if that's possible.
All right. Hour one in the books, cruising along. Brady will tell you what's trending. We'll get you ready for the top 4 and 4. That's coming up next. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game.
Join the conversation now and be part of the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the call.
At 802-655-6672.
Right.
It's the huddle with Arnie, Rich, and Brady on 101.3 The Game.
Good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game on this Thursday. Much going on. Busy Thursday.
Beautiful right? Thursday. What a day.
A little chilly out there.
Stop.
I see you're wearing your same jacket that you work out in.
What are you talking about? This is washed and hanging in my closet
today.
The
other jacket.
Underneath?
No, the one behind you on your chair.
Oh, yeah. The stupidest things bother him, Brady.
Arnie, I don't think that's a problem.
His arms are all sweaty. His shirt is all sweaty, and then he throws on that jacket.
For 9 minutes until you get home, and then you take it off, I think that's okay.
And then it gets soaked into the fur of the jacket.
Come here. Smell this. You smell anything? Wait. It smells brand new.
Yeah, I think that's okay.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't like that.
You're just making things up to make me look bad.
That's true.
So let me ask you this, though. So are you so OCD about laundry?
Yes.
Absolutely. So you play basketball on Wednesday.
Yes.
You put on a sweatshirt when you go home.
Yes.
And then that immediately goes in the laundry?
Every day when I'm done with Orange Theory, the 4 shirts I wear get washed.
Okay, the shirts, yes. What about the sweatshirt or coat you put on after?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's
absolutely
absurd.
And you know what?
Absurd.
And wait a minute.
How many clothes do you have?
Not only do that, when I leave the gym, I change my shirt to a dry shirt.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah,
that's fine.
If I wear a wet shirt, I will not put on a sweatshirt. Then I have to go out and I have to change my shirt to a dry shirt. Then I'll put on the sweatshirt or the jacket.
So a clean, dry shirt, and you're covered in sweat, which means you have to throw that one in the...
I take all the sweaty clothes and put it into another bag, and then I'll clean myself up and I'll put on a dry shirt, a long sleeve one, so I don't stink up my sweatshirt. Yeah, I am OCD with laundry. I do it every day.
Every day. So you will wash the sweatshirt after one use just because it came in contact with you while you were sweating for a few minutes.
Well, not really. Only if I wear like short sleeve shirts, but then I'm usually wiping myself down before I put it on.
Gross. How many shirts do you have? You're at Orange Theory like four days a week.
I made my wife buy 4 extra long sleeve shirts. I have to wear 4 shirts, so I have to wash them or I have to keep using the long sleeve shirts. Yeah, I absolutely do. Absolutely. I do that. Absolutely.
The best part of a new sweatshirt is when it has that new soft feeling.
Yes.
So you wear it and then wash it immediately, and then wash it every day practically, which basically just makes it a giant piece of sandpaper one week in.
Guys, Arnie doesn't do his own laundry. Let's be honest. His wife probably does it. If he no, I do it. It's not that. Listen to me. I don't tell my wife to take laundry to go down to the river with a bunch of rocks and bag them together. Those days are over, okay? I can take my laundry. It's not that tough to throw it in the laundry machine, and guess what? I just have to take my index finger and hit one button, and guess what? It washes itself. How about that?
Apparently you don't do it anyway because your lovely bride says, I do more laundry than anyone. And Isaac says, Arnie sounds high maintenance. But speaking of your lovely bride, by the way, thank her for the beef stew the other day.
The beef stew?
Outstanding. I got three meals out of that sucker.
I used some of it to shackle my walls. So
Kristen Champlain says, don't you go play basketball and dribble the same ball that sick people are dribbling? How do you handle that?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Do you wash the ball every time it's passed to you?
I don't let them use my ball. My ball is just for me to warm up with, and then I put it on the sideline. So I know you know that, Brady.
Yes, it
my
is.
My ball is, and then I like to rub it against my back to loosen my back up, and then I put it to the side so nobody can touch
it. Sort of like what I do with my pen.
I don't want you touching my ball.
That's fine, but I'm saying the ball that's played within the game that you are touching is touched by everyone else. You're a germaphobe.
It's not that I'm a germaphobe. I just like to be clean. That's why I look so young. Ty says, I'm worse than Arnie. I shower at the facility before I even get in my truck. Yeah, you really should be doing
and
that.
And that's fine. I do that plenty.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of people that do that.
I'm just saying
that. Wipe all the stink off you.
If you work out and then put on a sweatshirt just to get home and immediately take the sweatshirt off.
I can't do that.
I don't think that sweatshirt needs to be washed.
Yeah, but I can't do that. It does. It makes me feel, it makes the sweatshirt all horrible and I can't do that.
No, you need to seek help.
You are.
I change my socks three times a day.
How many pairs of socks do you have?
I have a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I would probably say about 40 to 50 pair.
I
wear one in the morning.
50 pair of socks?
Yeah, I wear one in the morning to work out at Orange Theory.
50?
And then I change it, then I put on when I get home, and then before I come to work, I may put on a fresh pair.
Gosh, 50 pair of socks is 2 months worth.
Yeah. Well, I wear a lot of socks. I like to keep, I have like 40 pair of underwear.
And I don't need to ever think about your underwear. But then the other thing about this is that socks, number one, do you even have them matched up in pairs? And number two, the more you wash socks, they again become sandpaper.
That's
They're
why
awful.
I buy them. That's why I keep buying them. Shackle my walls, you mean spackle.
You're getting clobbered on the text line.
I meant spackle. I'm sorry.
Shackle my walls. We're going to tie those walls right up.
Okay.
Did Arnie just say he shackles his walls with Beth's beef stew?
I meant spackle. it sounded like the right word at the right time.
We should hand prizes out to these people. Geez.
All right, Brady, let's get to the top word for her.
The Huddle has 3 hours of show to cover everything. Every day.
Four.
So you don't miss any.
Three.
It's the top four at four.
Two. One.
On 101.3 The Game.
Hey, and remember the top four at four, thanks to Grazer's Restaurant, Maple Tree Place, Williston, and on Main Street in St. Albans, up there next to 14 Star Brewery. You can order online, grazersvt.com. And by Agave, Taco Tequila Casa, also Maple Tree Place. We're trending towards the weekend, where you can think about your Sunday brunch already, 10 until 2. Online ordering available, agavevt.com.
And I've been to both of those places, and neither of them shackle their walls.
Oh.
Yep. And they're
making fun of my English?
Their stew is good enough, you don't even have to spackle the walls. So, top four at four.
Number four.
I've actually got a top four at four plus one today. So I've really got five stories, because I just wanted to make sure to mention this one. And so this is number four, part one.
Yeah, this guy's a piece of work.
Did you see this fun story? A former Yankees prospect by the name of Garrison Lassiter sued the organization in 2019 for $34 million. And the reason why is because he claims that the organization, the New York Yankees, sabotaged his career, of which he never played above low A ball. They sabotaged his career so they could protect the legacy of Derek Jeter. He says the Yankees were so worried that he was going to surpass Jeter that they cut him off in low A ball so that he would never get the chance to make Jeter look bad.
I know we're laughing about this, but I would like to ask somebody like this. I would love to interview. And there are, if we want to be serious, with some questions I would like to ask him. How does he write off about his batting average and all that, not being so great?
Which, by the way, was .244 over his minor league career.
He also played in Staten Island.
Yes, he did. So I knew I recognized that name from somewhere.
And then I would have asked him, if the Yankees wanted to curtail your career because they didn't want you to pass Jeter as a Yankee, Why didn't they just trade you?
Well, he said that they...
Oh, so he did.
He said that they talked bad about him to other organizations so that no team would trade for him.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that... Well, why would they do that then? Why would they want him to stop from being traded? I don't understand that.
Because this guy is clearly warped. And what's funny is, after he stopped playing baseball professionally, he's 30 now, he got a law degree. And I just think he's trying to use his degree. He's suing other people, too. He sued the Reds for $1 million. He sued, remember Ricky Prohl, the old wide receiver who played for the Rams and Panthers?
For the Cardinals, too.
So after this guy played baseball, he went to college at the University of Miami. They threw him off the team there. He was a backup quarterback. And then he sued.
Went to Rutgers?
No, Miami.
Oh, yeah, but didn't he go to Rutgers after that? No. Okay.
And then he sued.
He came out of high school.
Go ahead.
And then he sued Ricky Prohl's training facility for never getting him an NFL tryout. So he sued him too. So he's suing everybody. He sued the Yankees for $34 million. And the reason why, get this. So he said, in the lawsuit against the Yankees, Lasseter considers himself a mix of Los Angeles Dodgers shortstop Corey Seager, the 2016 NL Rookie of the Year.
Right.
And Brandon Weeden, former NFL quarterback. He says, I deserve $17.5 million because that's what Seager's made, and I was every bit as good as him, so I get everything he gets. And then he wanted $11.5 million, citing Weeden's earnings in his career in the NFL, saying I should get that.
$244 in A-ball.
Do you think there's any backstabbing like that? Or you're laughing? But
no, just this whole, I'm looking at this guy's stats. 4 home runs and 908 A-ball at-bats.
Brady, do you think any time a player tries to sabotage another player's career? Because it has happened.
A player, yes, I could. However, I don't think that the Yankees as an organization were worried about this A-ball shortstop ruining Derek Jeter.
But wait a minute, wasn't there wasn't there a thing with Magic Johnson and Isaiah Thomas? And Magic apologized to Isaiah. They were both crying on TV saying, yeah, I sabotaged you from being on the Olympics because I was so.
I don't remember that. No.
Yeah, remember there was a couple of series, a couple of specials where people would apologize to each other.
There was a 30 for 30, I know, where there was a controversy between Magic and Isaiah.
Yeah, Magic apologized to Isaiah for sabotaging him and keeping him off the Olympic team. And that's a bigger scale than this. I don't know. You got to wonder. You know, how good this guy would have been if he was in a different organization.
This is the guy who pours water in aisle 7 at the grocery store and slips on and says, your floor was wet, I want $20
million. Yes, so, I mean, this guy's ridiculous. The full story we have on 1013thegame.com, you should read it. It's interesting. You talk about playing the blame game and the guy who just wants to blame everybody else for his own shortcomings. That's this guy, Garrison Lasseter. Now, top 4 at 4+1, so here we are now at regular number 4.
Number 4.
The Celtics lost yesterday to the Spurs, but more so than that. Look, it was a disheartening loss. They got down big again early. So, awful. I mean, they lose 129-114, but a weird game. Yeah. They get down early. They come back. They're within 7, and then all hell breaks loose. Kemba Walker, of all people, one of the nicest people on the planet, he gets tossed for the first time in his career. Then a fan throws beer on the court. I mean, it's just a total cluster.
Well, first of all, the call was ridiculous, but you can't lose your cool.
No, you can't.
The funny thing was, though, if you watch the replay, Kemba goes and gets picked and gets flattened. All right, the guy missed it. The referee, who I believe is 11 years old, I watched every minute of that game. I've wasted 6 hours of my life watching the Celtics lose to two awful basketball teams in the last 3 nights, and I'm going to try again tonight. The call was bad. But Kemba can't get up and start swearing at the guy, which is apparently what the referee says he did. In fact, he did it twice.
He should not have gotten the double technical. I mean, come on. Look, and usually...
I thought that was bad, too. I'm shocked at that.
I usually will defend officials because, you know, they don't deserve to be verbally abused in most cases. But Kemba Walker comes in with no prior reputation. He said his piece. They teed him up. He says one more thing. They teed him up again. That's too quick of a trigger. That's just you having rabbit ears. I don't support that. After the game, Kemba talked about it.
It's the first time I've ever been ejected in my whole life. So I am a 2-time sportsmanship award winner as well. So maybe I should get a little leeway. I've definitely seen, I watch a lot of basketball. I see other guys do a lot worse, but like I said, the choice was his. He made it.
Look, I understand when a guy like Rasheed Wallace or Allen Iverson or whatever, I understand guys, that come in with a reputation that you're going to have a short fuse with. Kemba Walker says right there, I'm a two-time sportsmanship winner. Okay, give him the tee and let him walk away, and that's it. Don't have rabbit ears like this.
No, I agree with you. I'm wondering if the ref had to do it all again, if he would have made the same decision.
Oh, you know? I guarantee you he's going to hear about it. Danny Ainge already said he's talking to the league about it. Because this is some guy, apparently it's his first year in the league. He literally looks 14 years old. Oh. So, I mean, he looked like a nervous Nelly out there in the court after the... And then Brad Stevens gets teed up, which almost never happens, too.
For you guys who only want Brad Stevens to always show emotion, right. Well, there he was. He was saying he was dropping F-bombs, too.
He was furious. And the fact is, I mean, I'm sitting there, and they're down 22, and I'm thinking, all right, I'll hang in a couple more minutes. Next thing I know, it's 7, and then this happens, and you get 5 free throws, of which they hit 4. Yeah. And the lead goes up back up to 11, and the Celtics never came back.
Yeah, I've been waiting 8 years for this, for Brad Stevens to go ballistic. By the way, Isaac, George, and Burlington, Matt, and St. Albans all said the same thing. Yeah, Arnie's right. There was a big story that kept Magic kept Thomas off the Dream Team, and Shaq and Kobe had the similar sit-down, too, where they kind of hashed it out and kind of cried on TV.
Good. I'm proud of you. You had that one right.
I just think I wanted to see more of those. They just stopped doing it. I guess people didn't want to apologize on the air anymore.
Well, Celtics will take on the Sixers tonight. That game in Philly, 6:30 on 960 The Zone. Top 4 at 4. Oh, go ahead, Rich.
No, I was going to say, Dougie gets a text of the day. Arnie is neither stinking nor is he a genius. False advertising.
On what?
Turns out you're not stinking.
Because you take so many showers and do all this laundry.
Yeah,
so.
I got you now. I got you.
Top 4 at 4.
Number 3.
UVM men's basketball loses their league opener last night to Stony Brook. Final score was 81-77. This one was a really weird game to me. Look, it's a bad loss because of our expectation level as to where UVM is. Stony Brook's a good team. They were picked 3rd in the preseason conference poll. So it's not like they lost to an awful team. Losing at home is what bothers me. Losing a game in the league, I don't think I should have expected this team to go 16-0 in the league. You're allowed to trip up in the league. You're allowed to lose to a good team. But losing at home, I think, is where I have a problem with this. But think about the way this played out. UVM did everything we've asked them to do, essentially. They got to the line, made 20-plus free throw attempts, shot really well at the line. They did that. They were right there dead even. I think plus one on the rebounding margin with Stony Brook. They did that. They were tough on the interior. They shot well. They had 12 threes last night. I mean, they shot well. They rebounded well. They don't got to the line. It's not that they didn't play defense yesterday. They generally do play defense. So the one thing that we took for granted that they would do is what failed them yesterday, because Stony Brook shot, they hit 13 threes themselves.
They didn't play hard enough yesterday, and I usually don't say that about a Vermont team. And usually I'll just say, hey, they were beaten by the better team, and we'll just move on. They didn't play hard enough yesterday, and they didn't play good enough defense. They gave too many easy baskets. I'm sorry. I don't think I've seen this. I don't think I've ever said that about a Vermont team before in my life, but they just did not play hard enough on the defensive end.
And John Becker didn't mince words after the game. I mean, he talked about toughness. In fact, I think Brady's got it. He said, we just kind of got out-toughed. And he talked about not having the right guys for a game like that.
Stony Brook deserves a lot of credit. They played better than us, tougher than us, made the plays down the stretch they needed to. And, you know, we just couldn't guard them in the first half. It was a struggle tonight to find guys that could play in this game, honestly. We've got obviously a long way to go, but got nothing off the bench. And we're going to get everyone's best shot. It's a big game for everyone, and we have to realize we have to play a lot better than we did tonight.
Wow.
It kind of feels like the Patriots to me on Saturday last week against the Titans. Like, we always say you're going to take away what the other team does best, and the Patriots didn't do that. They allowed Tennessee to run all over them. We knew that Stony Brook's one of the highest-rated three-point shooting teams in the nation, and UVM allowed them to just keep doing it yesterday. UVM needed to run them off the perimeter, and for Stony Brook to get nearly 40 points of 80 at the three-point line, that, I think, is what's most disappointing to me.
And the other thing I thought was interesting in what we just heard from the coach is it was a struggle to find guys to play in this game tonight. I'm not sure. I mean, one thing that was a killer was Giddens immediately getting into foul trouble. He ended up 0 for 0 for 0 points.
And 0 rebounds.
Yeah, and 0 rebounds, which was everything. So he was a complete non-factor in every sense of the word. And that was a killer for them. They've also got to get more offense out of the Duncan brothers. Yeah. I mean, let's face it, that's becoming a little bit of an issue from time to time.
CJ and Burlington, remember when you guys thought Kempom was a huge idiot for having Vermont all the way in the 70s. I bet you guys would kill for that to be ranked that high. And Matt says,
good call.
Stony Brook was shooting lights out from deep. Vermont needs more from players not named Smith and Lamb, and need Giddens and Davis to be more aggressive. Three turnovers at the end were killers, too.
Yeah, and the missed free throw by Lamb at the end. And, of course, I mean, what can you say about that last possession? I mean, you talk about frustrating for the packed house there as Lamb tries to bank in the equalizer off the glass. That missed. And Ben Shungu, how much do you think he slept last night? Oh, my gosh. It was right there with a tip in, and he missed it.
Well, usually we're sitting here saying, oh, UVM needs another score. They do. Okay, trust me. I'd like to see them. They had 28 from Smith, 23 from Lamb yesterday. But when you look at the top three for UVM yesterday, 28 Smith, 23 Lamb, 8 Benny Shungu, they get 59 from their top three. If they did that every game, you'd be pretty okay with that. To say we're going to get 60 points from our top three, I think that would be pretty darn good. Now, sure, you'd like to be 20, 20, and 20 rather than have it be 28, 23, and 8, but 60 points a game from your top three would be pretty darn acceptable. Right. Stony Brook had 65 from their top three, so it wasn't like there was a massive disparity there. What John Becker says is true. They're not getting anything from the bench. They're getting, for however you slice it, their big three yesterday did the right, did the job. 60 points. You should be able to get 20-plus from the bench. I mean, between Bailey Patella and the Duncans and Giddens, I mean, it's not even the bench. It's between the last two starters and the bench.
And I'll tell you, the pressure's on now. That loss hurts them in a couple of ways because now they've got to go down to Baltimore, that long trip, and take on UMBC, team that's which somehow, I have no idea how this happened, but lost to Binghamton, of all teams. But you know UMBC is going to be tough. They've got the beautiful new arena down there, although UVM has had success on the road down there over the last couple of years. But I mean, if you're UVM, man, you cannot get out of the gate 0-2 in the league.
Madden Bompilio says UVM basketball is kind of like the Pats in that dominance may be over, and we'll just go back to being one of a couple of good teams in the conference.
Maybe the conference is just getting better. I mean, Stony Brook's always been good. Stony Brook's always been good.
I think, you know, this is...
Binghamton beat UMBC yesterday.
Right, but this isn't like losing to UMBC in the tournament. But this is one of the more disappointing losses in the 3.5 years we've been here, Rich. It's this one kind of stings a little bit. I know it's just a regular season one. Now I'm thinking, okay, doesn't matter if we get the number one seed. We'll just have to fight our way through the conference tournament wherever it's going to be and see what happens,
and
I guess.
And the estimation was about 200 people left with 2 minutes to play in the game. Classic
With 2 minutes left in the game, we were winning.
UVM was up by 5 at one point. They were up 74-69. Yes. So I don't know.
I was, for people at Orange Theory were ripping about the crowd. Just saying, I couldn't believe how many people left with 2 minutes to play. What would possess anyone to leave with 2 minutes left in a game like that is beyond me.
The bad parking situation. Top 4-4, 101.3 the game.
Number 2.
Could Freddie Kitchens be the next offensive coordinator for the New York Giants? It's possible, for sure. Joe Judge introduces the head coach of the Giants today, says he doesn't know who his staff is going to be, but Jordan Ronan of ESPN says, hey, there's a logical connection here. Kitchens and Judge work together at Mississippi State. Kitchens is out of a job after being fired by the Browns, so he could find a spot on his offensive staff. Maybe as the quarterback's coach, maybe as the coordinator, but Freddie Kitchens could end up in New York.
What qualifies a good OC? How many points your team scores? How you handle a quarterback? You know, do you have to have like the best offense? You know, what qualifies somebody? Are you an innovative play caller? Do you do trick plays? I'm not so sure. You know, what's the best call for an offensive coordinator?
Well, I think at this point, the two things you need to be are, as you mentioned, an innovative play caller that's on top of things that and getting to the edge of what's important before anyone else does, and having a relationship with your offensive players, I think, in this day and age, in every sport, makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And Freddie and Kitchens didn't necessarily have that with a lot of the Browns.
But think about, the Browns were a lot more high maintenance, a lot more volatile. Okay, a lot of divas on that roster. I don't see Saquon Barkley as a diva. I don't see Daniel Jones as a diva. Golden Tate is a guy that I by and large, people have spoken well about him. I know he might have slept with Russell Wilson's wife when they were in Seattle, but other than that thing, he's been generally pretty good. So
Matt in St. Albans says, I'm not kidding you. I kid you not, I'll stop being a Giants fan if they hire Freddie Bathrooms to be our offensive coordinator.
Well, hey, it's possible. And look, the Browns had a good offense in 2018 once Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley were replaced and Kitchens was there. And the Browns' offense last year, for all the grief that we gave them, Nick Chubb was second in the league in rushing, 1,500 rushing yards.
Yes.
Then you factor in Beckham and Landry, for as much as we want to say they didn't have great years, they each had over 1,000 yards receiving. Well, but if the New York Giants had two receivers with 1,000 yards and a 1,500-yard rusher, we'd be saying Freddie Kitchens was the best offensive coordinator ever.
Then I would say, how many points did they score? And if you told me they were down or middle of the road in points, then I'd say, well, here's a guy that can get him into the red zone, but they can't get him into the end zone. And to me, that's more important than, you know, anything else. Get in the end zone.
Is it Freddie Kitchens' fault that Nick Chubb fumbled twice on two consecutive carries against the Patriots? Is that Freddie Kitchens' fault?
No, that's not Freddie Kitchens' fault. Okay. No, but that, you know, that's one game, one short period here. I don't know the other 15.
Yes, and, I understand.
You know, and look, I don't know how many points he could put up, and then you got to look at the opponents and how good their defenses were. But that's the most important thing. How many times when you're in the red zone do you get in the end zone? That's what I want to know.
But the thing was, is you constantly kept hearing, especially in the second half of the season when it became clear that this Cleveland team wasn't going to be even close to playoff bound. I mean, Kitchens has a nice resume, but not as a head coach. Everyone just kept saying he's in over his head. I almost get the feeling the Browns themselves, the players, a lot of them were thinking this guy is in over his head. Maybe if you make him the OC, that's back in his comfort zone, and he might be good at what he's good at.
By the way, Browns 13th in the league in red zone percentage last year.
The Browns were 13th. 13th in red zone.
Yeah, so what you say, can he get him to the red zone but not into the end zone?
Is that underachieving because they had, as you mentioned, they had a second-best rusher, they had two good receivers, or is that exactly where they should be again? You know, I can't answer that one. I don't know.
I would say, and every team has this, I also would say there were some serious injuries that were a major part of what the Browns did. They lost Njoku. They lost Rashard Higgins didn't play a full season, I don't believe. Kareem Hunt wasn't around the whole year, so there were some things that worked against the Browns also. Antonio Callaway, remember Antonio Callaway drops the touchdown pass against San Francisco Monday Night Football, gets returned the other end, and then ends up being 31-3.
Then it's a blowout after that. I understand that. Matt says it is Kitchens' fault that Beckham had one of the lowest target rates of all one wideout receivers in the red zone. So all number one receivers, Odell Beckham Jr. had the lowest amount of targets. So I guess they're saying you can still draw the playoff for him, but if Baker doesn't throw it to him, nothing he could do. Again, that's, you know, catch 22 in that situation.
Last one.
Number one.
Simply, Joe Judge announced as the head coach of the New York Giants. We played 5 minutes of his press conference audio in the 3 o'clock hour. We'll play a little bit more in the 5 o'clock hour as well. But so that's number one. Let's kind of continue that conversation after the break.
All right, we'll get to that next. You're in the huddle. What a 1.3 the game.
Arnie.
That's why I'm like Einstein.
Rich.
Any movie's worth seeing, by the way. I haven't been to a movie in years.
Brady.
A lot of people don't like Friends. I don't know who these people are.
It's the huddle on 101.3 The Game.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game on this cold Thursday. Real cold out there. Rich likes it, though.
A beautiful day.
You're loving it.
All that sunshine, it was classic.
Good luck. Now it's dark out.
Right, I'm just saying. It was nice to see the sunshine.
It'll be fun going to Orange Theory and coming out at 8:15 and have it just be freezing.
Yeah,
the
but
wind
actually, I think that feels good. Like today, I loved it because, I mean, you're just soaked in sweat.
I don't love that feeling. No, I don't love being freezing coming out of the gym.
Yeah, but you're not. You're boiling hot. You're sweating like crazy, and then you come out, and it's like,
that's how you get pneumonia.
I'm in better shape than you, so I'm not drenched as much.
Literally you should half my age.
You should come to the advanced class, the one I'm in.
Yeah,
advanced, you should come to advanced that one.
I'd run circles around you.
Wow.
Advanced
Jeez,
class.
Jeez, unbelievable. All right, get to the mistake of the day. I don't know if that's here.
That is the mistake of the day. That you're in an advanced class of any form.
Mistake of the day, 802-655-6672. Thanks to Embroidery Works, Joanne's Uniforms, Heineberg Drive in Colchester. One of the favorite things that we heard today from Joe Judge's intro press conference with the New York Giants was when he answered this question. What did I learn from Nick Saban and Bill Belichick?
I worked for two great coaches, Coach Belichick and Coach Saban. There wasn't a day I went to work that I didn't come home with a full new education. And I knew fully every day that there were coaches out there that would pay thousands of dollars to sit in a staff meeting and just hear the wisdom they were saying on a daily basis. What I learned from Coach Belichick was real simple. Be flexible within your personnel. Don't try to shove round pegs in the square holes. Figure out what you have. Let them play to their strengths. Don't sit in a meeting and tell me what you don't have in a player. Don't tell me they can't do a certain thing. Tell me what they can do. And then we'll figure out as coaches, because that's our job, how we can use that. Everybody has something they can do. How many castoffs you see around the league that end up on another team? Everyone says, wow, how'd they get that out of them? Maybe they just weren't closing their eyes to what they could do.
I love that.
Not an in there. I love it.
I absolutely love that quote. It's what we've said about the Patriots forever, and why the Patriots get lauded with so much praise all the time is because they are able to figure out what players do best, and they don't ask them to go outside of that strength all that often, okay, or ever. Now, Julian Edelman, he's great in the slot. He's great in between the tackles. He's great in the middle of the field. That's what he does. We don't ask Edelman to go deep over the top all that often. James White is not a guy that's going to run it 18 times through the center of the defense, but he is a guy who's going to get to the edge, get to the perimeter, and catch those screen passes and catch passes out of the backfield, and he's going to do that, and he's going to do it really well. If the New York Giants can open themselves up to that way of thinking, you might unlock some more players that we hadn't really thought about for them.
What I would change is, well, one thinking that I've changed a little bit, especially when it comes to the draft, is I love the blue bloods. That's what I'm about. Give me anybody that played for Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and I'm drafting them. You got to draft more of the guys that come from schools that you don't watch on TV, but they're like 6-6, and they didn't go to a bowl game maybe, or maybe they played in some crappy bowl. But the kid is just busting his hump and works harder than everybody else out there. There's a lot of kids on 6-6 teams that are going to make it in the NFL that we just don't see. You have to keep your open mind to that.
Look at all the Rutgers guys that end up on the Patriots.
This is the 100% the dad part of Arnie coming out. My kid works his tail off. He just needs a chance. I want to give chances to the Taysom Hill.
And you just saw that kid before before my kid is now going to Vancouver and Washington Capitals camp. Should be my kid going to Vancouver camp.
I'm saying that's the dad in you talking that your kid deserves chances, so all these other kids deserve chances. No, I'm perfectly fine with that. I'm just saying.
These are college kids. I mean, major college kids. Just because you play for a Missouri or an Arizona, that's not a good team.
You want more Taysom Hills on the New York Giants.
It wouldn't bother me. That certainly wouldn't bother me at all. I used to make fun of the Giants for drafting that guy. Was it Hernandez from UTEP?
Yeah.
I'm like, why are you drafting a kid in the second round that in 4 years maybe won 3 games? I go, they don't win any games at UTEP, but that doesn't make a difference.
You think it's going to be a little different from the New York Giants fan base if Judge gets off to what could very well happen, one of those 1-5 starts? I mean, at what point do you... I feel like...
Why is that going to happen?
Well, no, because that's what the Giants have been doing for a while. 2-6, 2-7,
You have to...
I mean, I'm not just throwing that out as an idea. It's entirely possible that could happen.
You have to wait and see what happens in the draft. And again, the show is today, so it's a fair question, but we're not going to know if that's possible until we see, one, how does the schedule line up? Okay, last year we thought the schedule was favorable for them in the early season and then not so good at the end of the season. Well, they had an opportunity, we thought early, that they could be pretty good. We have to see how the schedule lines up, and then we have to see who they draft and what they do with this cap space. They're going to have $60 million+ in cap space. Can they go get more help on the offensive line? Can they go get some more pass rushers? Can they help themselves in the secondary? The whole defense essentially needs an overhaul with the exception of just a handful of players, including Peppers and Tomlinson and Dexter Lawrence and all that. But they need a lot of help defensively. What can they do with $60 million and the draft, and including the number 4 pick in the draft?
Okay, so to answer my question, if all of that comes to fruition, they make the number 4 pick, it's a good one, it has instant impact, and then they're 2-6. I mean, I assume the expectations are going to rise considerably with Joe Judge at the helm. What if they start out 2-6? Is it going to get ugly again fast?
Right. If he gets the right pieces, this guy's going to turn it around. We're not going to. Then it's what? Not the coaching. Then it's the players or the GM, and the GM's getting the wrong players, and they're never going to turn it around. Is that what you're saying?
No, I suspect Gettleman's going to start taking crap long before Joe Judge does, though.
Of course, at this point, he's already catching.
Gettleman has got 1 foot off the cliff right now, as far as New York
one
sports fans.
One foot on the
fans.
Banana peel is what he's got.
Yes. I'm happy that now 2 days have gone by and the Giants are now starting to get some applause for what they've done in the hire of Joe Judge. And Judge won the press conference today to show, to prove people right, people who liked him right. I think the Giants deserve some applause here as well for going outside the box. We see oftentimes retread coaches. And look, I didn't hate the hire of Pat Shurmur when it came a couple of years ago. I'll be the first to admit that I was fine with that. I thought maybe he'd learn from what happened in Cleveland. But it's always retread head coaches. And okay, now we're going to give the job to Doug Marrone. And we're going to give the job to Mike McCarthy. And we're going to give the job to Jeff Fisher 100 times. Like, these are the guys that get jobs. Well, the teams that have gone outside the box the last couple of years, look, Bruce Arians. Hired as an old guy. We didn't think old guys should be coaches, and Arians took the Cardinals to the NFC title game and got rehired in Tampa and made Jameis Winston the highest, volume passer in the league this year, and there's some good things going on in Tampa. And Cliff Kingsbury last year hired outside the box, and people weren't so sure about that. And at least offensively, his specialty, you're starting to see some improvement there from Arizona. I like the outside the box hire here the Giants made.
In a way, it's a little bit outside the box. You're lucky two other talk show hosts aren't here that would be jumping down your throat right now. And Chris Broussard and Rob Parker from The Odd Couple, because they'd saying it's not outside the box because he's not a coach of color. And there's only three black coaches in the NFL. And they say, now that's outside the box. Taking a coach who's black, that's innovative, somebody that deserves a chance, that's not been given a chance, like an Eric Bieniemy or somebody like that, that they would say is outside the box. But I do agree with you a little bit. Joe Judge is a little bit outside the box. But if they really wanted to go ahead and set any, you know, precedent here, you go out and you would have hired yourself a black coach.
Please read Ty and Canada's message.
What did it say?
It's usually good, and this is one of the better ones.
Yep. I am calling shenanigans on Arnie. He says kids from non-power colleges need a fair look, but ripped Daniel Jones for not going to a traditional football powerhouse school. Yeah, let me explain something to you. There's a little bit of a difference between an offensive lineman that goes to UTEP and then a quarterback. I do want my quarterback to be a blue blood. Am I wrong about that? Is that bad to have your quarterback play for a major?
Well, how about Patrick Mahomes going to Texas Tech? Would that be a blue blood?
Yeah, that's a Power 5 conference.
So is Duke. Yeah. Whether you agree, Duke is also a Power 5 conference.
But Texas Tech has more of a pedigree. Drew Brees
went to Purdue.
Duke. Well, that's not a football power. Though back in the day, Purdue was a little bit better. Yeah, it was much better than what you guys know about Purdue now. I do want my quarterback to have more of a pedigree or do more in college. Then I know there's Wentz. I'm not a big Wentz fan, but he seemed to have done a good job coming from that baloney school up in North Dakota, wherever the hell he's from.
You projected that the Bills...
Well, am I wrong about that?
No. In fact, we have him on this on 960 The Zone this weekend.
I'm not a big Wentz fan, but some people will say he's been successful.
You predicted the Bills would beat the Patriots and that they'll overtake the Patriots next year in the division with their quarterback from that great football power known as Wyoming.
And but you know what? Some people, they go opposite of me. They think that he's the... You think he's horrible too, Brady. What are you talking about?
Get him, Brady. Keep going.
Brady thinks he's horrible. What are you talking about?
I do, but I'm just saying Arnie doesn't think he's horrible.
It's not that I don't think he's horrible. I think he could be a good quarterback.
Also,
he's just not a good quarterback.
Also, week two last year, you came in on Monday after week two and declared a new sheriff in the AFC, that great power of the Jacksonville Jaguars with their great quarterback
last year.
From that great football power, Central Florida, Blake Bortles. So all these people that you've declared to be better than the Patriots coming from Central Florida and Wyoming.
And I believe that was after Jacksonville ripped up the Patriots.
Woody says, way to explain it, Artie. As always, you're the shining star. Thank you, Woody. And Jay says, McNabb went to Syracuse. You don't have to go all the way back to McNabb to find a quarterback.
Okay. How about your buddy Jimmy G, who you're in love with? He went to Eastern Illinois.
Yeah, so did...
apparently, that's a college.
Romo went to... Eastern Illinois also, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Well, obviously that's a powerhouse. They got two quarterbacks in the NFL.
Give me another team
that had two quarterbacks that went out there. No, but they're right about Jimmy G. He did. He was an Eastern Illinois guy.
Roethlisberger to Miami of Ohio.
That was a good one. But he was drafted early, too. What, second round or first
round? First round, picked in the top 10.
Yeah, Matt Ryan went to Boston. Okay, enough! Leave me alone! Leave me alone.
Steven Hauschka, the kicker. Where did he go? He went to a small school.
He went to Middlebury.
That's a kicker. Stop it now.
I couldn't help it.
Yeah. 802-65. Keep him coming. 802-655-6672 if you want to go ahead and jump on in. Brady, what do we got coming up?
We got to get into some of the baseball sign-stealing stuff. Dan Wheeler spent part of 14 years in the major leagues with the Rays, Astros, Indians, and 1 year with the Red Sox. He's going to stop by and tell us what he thinks about it.
All right. We'll get to that next. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game.
Arnie's done national radio and lived all over the country. But this is the best show he's ever been a part of.
Oh, yes.
It's The Huddle on 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. You're in The Huddle. 101.3 The Game. Busy Thursday. So much going on, guys. Let's go right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now, spent part of 14 years in the majors, a lot of them in the AL East, with the Rays, spent a little bit with the Red Sox. He's actually coming to the area. He's going to go ahead and be teaching a baseball clinic in Plattsburgh. It's Dan Wheeler. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks a lot for coming on the show. Right off the bat, all we're talking about, all the big news in baseball, the allegations of these sign stealing with the Astros, the Red Sox. These are two teams that you actually spent time with. So when you read about this, when you heard about this, what was your initial reaction?
Well, my initial reaction, I mean, I hate to see anybody use technology for that sort of stuff. I mean, listen, if I'm not good enough to hide my signs, you know, with my catcher, you know, and they're picking them up at second base, or we're stealing signs from a third base coach, or, you know, if we're picking up, you know, a pitcher that's, you know, that's tipping his pitches, that's one thing. But I don't know, it just disappointed me a little bit to see that if they were really, you know, going to the next level with that kind of stuff. I feel like, I don't know, there's a lot of unwritten rules in baseball. I think that should be one of them. So, I don't know, we'll see. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah, Dan, you played, what was it, 2012 was your last year, I think. Did you notice the infiltration of technology starting to seep its way into the game at that point?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think I had a double A coach, Bill Russell, played for the Dodgers back in the day.
Oh yeah,
and you know he always told us it was a lot easier to make it to the big leagues than it is to stay in the big leagues. And I was like, you're crazy. I just want to get to the big leagues. You know, at the time I was 21 years old in double A, but I learned very quickly what he was talking about. I was very fortunate to get to the big leagues that year, but then the following year I made the team and then I got sent out. And that's because of technology. That's because, you know, I'm not making up any new pitches. I mean, you know, I have what I have, so I have to make adjustments. And so do the hitters. And that's what they did. They made adjustments on me, so then when I got back there, I had to make sure that I made the same adjustments on those guys. So,
you know, Dan, if you found out I'm sympathetic to the pitchers on this. If you found out that your opponents were cheating or the hitters knew what was coming, what's your reaction to that?
I honestly don't even know. I mean, what can you do? I mean, I guess, you know, what they started to do, I think they were starting to use multiple signs with nobody on, you know, and trying to really, you know, just, you know, change up whatever there is. I mean, at that point, if you knew there was somebody that was doing that, I mean, listen, I mean, they're not the only team that's done it. They just might be the only teams that have been caught. So when you think about that stuff, you just got to try to do a better job of hiding that information away and just trying to don't give anybody any added advantage whatsoever.
Former Major League reliever Dan Wheeler with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. Played a lot of years for a lot of organizations, including with the Red Sox back in 2011. And he'll be in our area later this month doing a coaching clinic with Kangaroo Court North Baseball out in Plattsburgh. We'll get to that momentarily. But, Dan, the electronic sign stealing, our last question there, do you consider that cheating to be as bad as PEDs or steroids?
No, I don't think so. I think it's not good. You know, PEDs, there's a definite distinct there. I think at the end of the day, you still have to, like, regardless of whatever you're doing, you still have to make pitches and you still have to hit pitches. You still have to go out there in different situations, you know, where there's, you know, 20,000 or 50,000 people watching you, be able to control your emotions, being able to quiet your mind and be able to physically make a pitch, you know, and really at the end of the day, I mean, if you have a little bit of information or if you feel a bit stronger because you're doing something, you still baseball, you go watch batting practice and you know, the coach is trying to let these guys hit it and they're still popping it up sometimes. So there's a lot that goes on with that, you know, but you still have to actually, you know, produce and execute.
I'm wondering, as a pitcher, would you prefer an ump or electronically called balls and strikes?
Ump, 100%. Why? I don't want anything to do with electronic strike
balls. Why? Why? I mean, at least you know every time if it's going to be. There's no arguing here.
Nope. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. There's a human element in this game that is spectacular. I'm not a big fan of instant replay in baseball. I get it with the home runs and stuff like that where you. You know, there's different ballparks, so you have to kind of take a closer look. You know, you might not see that. But as far as the other stuff, you know, like, for example, like, I mean, the thing that drives me crazy is when you get a guy stealing second base, and he clearly beats the throw by, like, 5 feet. but he's sliding in his momentum, and the guy is taught to hold the glove on him.
Right, right.
I mean, he comes off just for like not even a split second. Now he's out.
Yeah,
I don't believe that. I don't believe that. Come on, that's a loophole that they have found in this game, and I don't like it.
Right. Nice try, though, Arnie. He wasn't going to budge on that one. He's such an inciter.
Yes.
Dan, about your career, I mean, you played, as we mentioned, with the Sox for a little while in 2011. What are your memories of your times in Boston?
Oh, I mean, Boston to me, I mean, I grew up in Rhode Island. So, yeah. I mean, it was a childhood dream for me just to play baseball as long as I could. But the fact that I got to play at the highest level and get to play for the Boston Red Sox, you know, my hometown, my childhood favorite team was amazing. I mean, there's no place, in my opinion, and I'm obviously biased because that's where I grew up, and that can match the intensity and just what you could when you walk into Fenway Park, it's just amazing. I mean, the crowd and the fans and everything that goes into that, and the ballpark, the history, it's awesome.
What was the difference between playing for the Red Sox but going into Fenway as an opponent when you played all those years with the Rays? What's the difference between being on the Red Sox and being against them?
Well, I mean, you know, you kind of know the Red Sox during that time. I mean, playing against them, they were the best. I mean, when I got traded over to Tampa, they had just won the World Series. So, I mean, we're competing with those guys all through 2008 and, you know, through 2010 to – you know, they were what you wanted to be. And so knowing going into the how good of roster, how good a team that they had, I mean, how deep they were, not just offensively, but pitching, and they could play some defense and just a good group of guys too. But you just want to beat and compete against the best. So, but I enjoyed both aspects of it, competing against them and then also playing for them.
You know, you played with Dustin Pedroia, and he's become quickly a source of conflict among Red Sox Nation because he's still trying to hang around and play, but he's taking up a lot of money, taking up a roster spot, and some fans are split kind of on what he should be doing with his career. Tell us about what it's like to play with Pedroia.
Pedroia is one of my favorite all-time teammates. He was amazing. The hard work that guy put in and day out, I think they should let him do whatever he wants because his work ethic to me was second to none. I mean, I would get to the ballpark pretty early on a daily basis just because I liked being at the ballpark, and he was already there, had already taken 100 ground balls and 100 swings, you know, in full BP uniform at like 12:30. I'm like, "Do you ever go home?" He's like, "Nope, this is my home." And that's just the kind of guy he is. And to me, if it was me, I'd want to try to, if he feels like he can still do it, play as long as you can. You know, because at some point in your life, you're not going to be able to do it.
Who's the hardest player that you had to throw against? Who's the one that kind of just dominated you?
You know, there was some really talented players out there, obviously. But, you know, I mean, I feel like there was a couple guys that I feel like always, you know, it didn't matter what I did, no matter what pitch I threw, they would hit a double or something, you know, home run. You know, Ian Kinsler and Prince Fielder were two guys. I feel like they kind of just and it was the craziest thing ever because I feel like you know when you're trying when you're out there on the mound you're trying to make pitches somehow some way you'd find the middle of the plate and you just let them have one. So sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't. Most times it didn't with those guys.
All right,
so,
I'll go down this road. Who's the guy you owned on the mound?
Oh, I don't remember that kind of stuff.
I tried.
Dan Wheeler with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Dan, we mentioned you're coming to town later this month as part of a baseball clinic that's happening in Plattsburgh. It's with a travel program called Kangaroo Court North. You're a part of the same program down in their Tampa Bay division. How important is it for you to come back up north and kind of continue to grow the game in the Northeast where you're from originally?
I think it's awesome. I think it's very important. You know, I'm lucky enough to be able to do this kind of stuff right now. And you know, give back as much as I can and, you know, hopefully, and just kind of spread the word, you know, don't think that it's because you're from, you know, upstate New York or wherever, you can't make it because I'm living proof that you can. They might not be able to play year round like we can down here, but sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that's a bad thing. But I'm really looking forward to it. Jason Miller, who is the owner, operator, president of Kangaroo Court, he's a really good buddy of mine, and he's been trying to get me up there, and this year is actually going to work out because my schedule is clear. So I'm very excited to go up there and meet some. And I actually have, a couple kids that will, that I've been in contact with. So I'm looking forward to one kid's, going to be on my, my 15U team, my 2023s. And then I'm going to have another kid, a couple kids that are going to be up there too.
Wow. It's awesome.
All right. East Dan Wheeler has been part of 14 years in the majors. Dan, thanks for stopping on by. We'll have to say hello. Come on by when you get into town.
Love to.
All right. Thanks to Dan Wheeler for stopping on by. Brady, I know you said it was full. Is there a way, in case something opens, a website they can go to? Or
you can follow Kangaroo Court North on Facebook. But so the clinic itself is full, but there's openings on the Kangaroo Court North team and in their program for roster spots, things like that. So you can follow them on Facebook. Really cool, actually, what Dan said at the end there, that there are some kids that are from Plattsburgh that are actually going to go down to Tampa for the summer and be a part of his team. So
Very good
perspective on what it was like to play for the Red Sox. Great perspective on Pedroia. Rich, your eyes kind of lit up when he said, best teammate I ever had.
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. So Dan Wheeler.
2 hours are in the books. The Power Hour is coming up next. Brady will tell you what's trending. Then we'll get you ready for Bob Soucy, voice of your New England Patriots. I wonder what he's got to say today. All that's coming up next. You're in the huddle. 101.3
The Game.
Think your day was tough at work?
And this is back in the day before we had the computers and they were released.
Imagine having to sit in a 10x10 room listening to Arnie for 3 hours.
Without breaking it down.
It's the huddle on 101.3 The Game.
All right, good evening, everyone. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game on this Thursday. So much to get to, mere moments away from Bob Soucy, voice of your New England Patriots. We'll talk to him for the final time. Real quick, why don't you read what Triple E sent on
Oh, sorry. I was shopping for new skis.
Yeah, I know you are shopping for new skis out there.
Yes, Triple E, one of our regulars, and we like him. He's usually fairly sensible with his he always is. To the best radio station this side of the Rockies. So do we really need to read anything else beyond that? That's all we need to hear. Minus Arnie's trillion listeners a month.
We're adding to it.
As an avid listener and not a good contributor to your show, regardless, you guys are great and are the highlight of my 101.3 listening experience. And it's my birthday. Keep it rocking,
happy
fellas.
Happy birthday.
Triple E, happy 29th.
Happy birthday to you, my friend. So there you go.
All you got to do is kiss our butts here on the text line, and we'll say anything
about
you.
By the way, everybody's jumping on me about Joe Flacco went to Delaware.
Right.
And all the people that have said it were quarterbacks went to small colleges.
Right, Bledsoe, Leaf to Washington State.
That's not small.
Romo, we said, went to Eastern Illinois. He actually went to Northern Illinois. So we hadn't made a mistake in like 7 minutes.
We only came up with like 52 million quarterbacks that were sent in.
And Ty, of course, chimes in. It's always a good day to humble the genius.
Yeah, I didn't give that one much thought there. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now, voice of your New England Patriots, thanks to our friends at New England Automotive, it's Bob Soucy. Bob, how are you doing today? Are you okay, my friend, or what?
Well, you know what? I have to be, because I've been charged with the duties again to take the kids to dance and music lessons. So here I am.
Reality sets in.
Life goes on.
That's right. They don't care whether the Patriots won or lost. It's time to dance. Right? First of all, Bob, thank you so much. It was a thrill for me as a play-by-play guy who does a lot of football and stuff. Just being able to talk to you and get your thoughts on stuff was quite a thrill for me. So thank you so much. But what are your memories of the Patriots this year as you look back?
Yeah, well, thank you so much, because it's a lot of fun. You guys are great. I really enjoy these conversations, and you ask great questions for what it's worth for me, and I enjoy the back and forth. And with regards to this question, well, there are a lot of things to look back on and be thankful for this season. And obviously, it didn't end the way that we all expected it would, nor did it end the way that the players themselves and the coaches, I think, expected it would. But Belichick always talks about a crash landing, and that's what it was. But for me, I think it's a collection of some individual standouts, like Matthew Slater, for example, first and foremost, always a class act. But I think about him earning an 8th Pro Bowl nod and being an All-Pro. And now as he heads into the uncertain stretch with his contract up and contemplating retirement or coming back, you know, if he does exit, he exits on maybe what was his best season to date. You know, he scored his first career touchdown, blocked his first career punt. It was a leader of a unit that was terrific, and I think, you know, he's a guy that indeed was at his best this year, and that's saying an awful lot for somebody that a lot of people believe deserves some consideration down the road for Canton. And you know, and if he does come back, well, you know, who better to have once again as the captain of that special teams group? And you go on and on. Julian Edelman's toughness and reliability for so much of the year, another 100-yard, 100-catch season, 1,000-yard season for him. But, you know, the way he really wore down toward the end, and unfortunately a lot of people will remember, if not most, and certainly the last impression would be that key drop in the Tennessee game. But I just think about, you know, what a competitor he is, and it's something we've seen year after year. But, you know, the way he battled this year through the rib injuries and then the chest and the shoulder injuries and then a knee injury and still out there, whether it was in route as a pass catcher or blocking, as we saw a lot more of him last couple of games for the Pats. And, you know, the number of other guys, the defensive dominance early, I think the play of Stephon Gilmore for the vast majority of the season, with really one game's exception against Miami in Week 17, the development of some of the young guys on defense that, you know, are still role players, but I think, you know, are guys that next year are going to have more prominent roles. Like Chase, what is it, 5.5 sacks? J.C. Jackson, you know, having another fine year in the secondary. Somebody like Adam Butler, you know, developing in a pretty good situational pass rusher for them. And go ahead.
I was going to say, Bob, how weird is it for you to have an off season that begins in January? Do you even know what to do with yourself?
I do what my wife tells me to do. But you're right. Usually this is the first time for me that I haven't at least been preparing for an AFC championship game in the postseason. It's been really a remarkable run for this team. It's astounding when you think about it, year after year after year, not just reaching the playoffs, but getting to a conference championship game and having gone to the Super Bowl four times in the previous 5 years. And here we are on the second weekend of the postseason this year, and the Patriots are on the outside looking in, the first time they've been in this situation since they lost to the Ravens in the wild card round in January of 2010.
Wow. Bob, how about the off season? Okay. I think could the team move to Hartford was maybe the biggest storyline in franchise history, but is this Brady stuff, is this the biggest off season in Patriots history?
Well, it certainly is the most tiresome at this point too already. We're not even a week in. Nonstop. It has to be. I think when you look at the career he's had, 20 years, 6 championships, you know, all the individual accolades, the MVPs of seasons, the MVPs of Super Bowls, the records, particularly the postseason records, and then you consider, you know, when you take a step back and think about, you know, what was it like when Ted Williams walked away, or you know, when Larry Bird played his last game, when Russell and Cousy played their last games for the Celtics, and Bobby Orr, you know. You hope, at least I hope, that this wasn't Tom Brady's last game on Saturday night against Tennessee. But, you know, if it was, I'm going to look back, and you talk about the memories from this past season. I'm going to look back, and that's, you know, it didn't end the way that it should have for him, with a pick six, thanks to his old teammate Logan Lyon. But, you know, I'll be thankful for just the opportunity to watch him these last 7 years and call his games. But I still think that, you know, there's a very, very good possibility, if not a probability, that he's going to be back in a Patriots uniform this coming season, and maybe beyond that for the following season. Of course, a lot of answers to questions that everybody has will be resolved in time, but it's going to be a long time, I think, before a lot of them become clear. But, you know, certainly, it is the biggest question, I think, to resonate throughout New England in maybe the history of not only the Patriots, but really the modern history of New England major league sports. I mean, I can't think of any player, for example, from the Red Sox during my lifetime that, you know, has been in this situation, or with any of the other teams, whether it's the Bruins, the Celtics, or
The Revolution.
The Revolution. Got distracted there for a minute. But it is amazing.
Bob Soucy, voice of the Patriots. He's been on with us every single week of the NFL season. We certainly appreciate that and all the great feedback we've gotten from listeners on this segment. It's all been thanks to New England Automotive. Bob, how about the biggest offseason storyline for the Patriots not involving Tom Brady?
Well, I've now found a quieter place where I can, I think, focus a little bit better. I think it starts with Devin McCourty. In the secondary, when you look at Brady and McCourty, they're the two quarterbacks, one on offense, of course, the other on defense. So if we're talking individuals, I think it starts there. He's made it clear he wants to come back and play, too. Some people had wondered whether he might retire, considering that he gave an indication last year that at least he was contemplating it around the Super Bowl. And then I think you look at the direction of this team. You know, if it's Brady, you know, what do they add around him on offense? Because that will be part of the equation, I would have to think, and part of the enticement for him to return to New England. If he does, they're going to have to add pieces. There's no doubt about that. What's going to happen to the defense? They're going to lose some key people. And even if Devin McCourty stays, with Kyle Van Noy, a free agent, with Jamie Collins, a free agent, I think there's a very strong likelihood that both of those guys are gone. And I wouldn't be surprised if Van Noy hits it big on the open market. And, in Jamie Collins' case, it's an interesting situation, tremendous, athlete and talent, but kind of tapered off down the stretch this year, and maybe teams are going to be a little bit leery considering, what happened in Cleveland when he got the big deal there. But then beyond that, too, I mean, the coaching changes per usual here with his staff. Joe Judge now the head coach of the Giants. I thought it was so impressive today based on what I heard from his press conference. Yeah. In New York, a real surprise hire. The uncertainty right now surrounding Josh McDaniels, but how's Bill Belichick going to address the situation with Judge and potentially McDaniels, and then beyond that, some of the other coaches that may be leaving as well. There's going to be some attrition off the staff when it all shakes down. So I think it's going to be a very fascinating offseason, whether it's with the personnel on the field or on the sideline, and then to extend that up to the front office. What about Nick Caserio? His contract will be up. Monty Ossenfort, the director of college scouting, Dave Ziegler, the director of pro scouting, all have been reportedly, guys in the past who've at least sought to interview elsewhere or been in pursuit of other jobs or had teams pursue them. And it's going to be very interesting to see how that unfolds with the impact they've all made in their respective roles for a long period of time in each case under Belichick and personnel.
Bob, I'm kind of curious, what did you make of Tom Brady's Instagram post? Is there any hidden messages in it that we didn't find out, or how do you read into it, Bob?
Well, I love him at least alluding to the man in the arena. It's one of my favorite quotes from Teddy Roosevelt, but I try not to do that because we spent so much time, particularly remember in 2017 after the Tom versus Time series,
yeah,
and the Patriots lost to the Eagles, between Brady and Gronkowski and all the cryptic messaging that off season, I was pretty fatigued back then, and now here we are again in that exercise once more. But I just see it simply as an indication that he wants to come back and play. And I also think the team message was real interesting to me. There's been this thought all season long on talk radio here that Tom Brady wants to leave because it's an individual thing, and he's taken less in the past, and he wants to now get his, so to speak. And that's been part of the narrative locally. And I always think with him, and this is why I think he's so well-respected, not only in that locker room but elsewhere, it always has been about team first. Hardest working guy. I saw a tweet today from Clay Harbor, who was here very briefly as a reserve tight end, and he said the thing that always struck him about Brady is that, here he was the best player ever in his mind, and he's in the front of the class, taking notes like he's a rookie. That's the way he was when they had team meetings and whatnot. And Matthew Slater has said it before as well. How can you not come in here and work hard when you see the best player ever who's outworking everybody? And, to me, that message on Instagram was
was a resounding affirmation that he's coming back. He wants to continue to play. He's got more to prove. But I also thought that the message was centered around the team. And I thought as well in his press conference on Saturday night that, you know, he sounded like a guy that, you know, hopes it works out here. That's more, you know, with my heart than with my ears and my brain and my gut. That's kind of how I feel. So I think if it's going to come down to what and where the market is, it's going to come down, obviously, in what the value of Bill Belichick affixes to him as the quarterback of this team and, you know, how much Belichick wants to change things on offense. You know, if they need to be more athletic, they need to change tendencies, things of that nature. If there's a quarterback who could step in if the cost is too extreme, well, how far will Robert Kraft go to try to match any offers that are out there on the open market? And you know, I'm a little skeptical about that market because there are so many good quarterbacks and so many veteran quarterbacks out there. But also, you know, what's the opportunity going to be? Where's it going to be? And will it be something that suits his liking ultimately? So I'm still very hopeful that, again, and I'm saying this more with my heart than with anything else, that and when it all comes down to it, the 11th hour, if it goes that far, that Tom Brady, if he has an offer, will come back to the Patriots, and you know they'll come close enough at least to entice him to stay. Because I think this is, you know, this is where he should retire in my mind, and I think if there's ever an exception, if Bill Belichick is ever going to maybe allow that cost to just exceed the value of a player, it's certainly with this guy. And Bill said it, too, in his post-mortem press conference on Sunday morning. Look, after really deflecting and refusing, you know, to answer all the questions about the future, he did recognize and acknowledge that, you know, Tom is an iconic figure in the history of this franchise.
Bob, before I let you go, I have one question, and it's strange not to be able to answer it with the usual, the New England Patriots, but who do you think's winning the Super Bowl this year?
I gotta, you know what? I have to think the Ravens at this point. Although the one thing about playing the Super Bowl is that whoever they meet, if they get there, will have 2 weeks to prepare, and that certainly is an advantage trying to go up against a quarterback like Jackson and what they do, the uniqueness of it in NFL circles. Kansas City's playing really well on not only on offense, but their defense has improved, I think, vastly. So I think if those are the two teams to meet in the AFC Championship, you're looking at a great game. Then on the NFC side, I think that the 49ers, it may very well come down to, you know, that NFC matchup a third time. The 49ers are a team that, you know, they're so balanced on offense and defense. They got a great defense. And if Garoppolo doesn't turn the ball over, if he takes care of the ball, I think San Francisco's got a great chance to be there. But ultimately, I like Baltimore.
Bob Soucy, the voice of the New England Patriots. You heard him and Scott Zolak every week of the NFL season doing all the games right here on 101.3 The Game on our sister station, 960 The Zone. Bob, you and I reached out to each other to set this up back in July. We it seems like a long time ago, but we appreciate all you brought to our Patriots coverage this year, and have a great and restful offseason, and we'll bug you sometime around the draft, I'm sure, but we'll look forward to talking to you again the next time.
I'd love to hear back from you guys and check back in, and hopefully by then, of course, Tom Brady's still a Patriot, Devin McCourty's still a Patriot, and the Pats have reloaded rather than started any kind of a rebuilding process.
I love it.
Thanks, Bob. Off to dance class.
There you go. Dance class, Bob, for you, Bob. Bob Soucy, everybody, voice of your New England Patriots. Thanks to our friends at New England Automotive. So it was good talking to Bob all year long, no doubt about that.
A lot of fun. And look, Bob and I, it's hard to believe it was July that Bob and I set this up to come on every single week, and cannot thank him enough for being accommodating. And, you know, we had Thursday night game against the Giants, and Bob had no problem doing it then. No matter what he was doing, he had no problem joining us, and that was awesome.
And you know how I am. I'm not a hero worshiper, but some of these play-by-play guys that have my dream job, I'm just like, wow, I'm talking to this guy. It's awesome. And I love the fact that he's Bob Soucy, and he's so famous and all this other stuff. He's so good. He's such a great listen, in my opinion.
Yeah, he is.
His partner might be a little different story, but I love Bob. I think he calls an incredible game. But the fact that he's sitting there and he has to take his kid right off to dance class, yeah. You know, it's like, welcome to the end of the season.
Should have asked him if you could do, like, one of the preseason games, because he doesn't call the preseason games. What?
Why bother?
Why not? They use schlubs, right? Don't they use schlubs for preseason games?
Yes. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Matt Chatham.
All right. I'll stick to...
You'd be better than Chatham would be.
I'll stick to BFA at Colchester.
Come on. I'm Rich Haskell. And here are the Patriots taking the field.
I'd collapse.
Patriots Giants preseason game number 4 from Gillette.
All of a sudden, halfway through the first quarter, and Brady's back to pass.
I can see what's going. The quarterback. Damn, what was his name again? I can't remember it. Tom Brady, I think, is his name.
I wanted to have a quick discussion on what we asked Bob, because I thought it was a really good question. What do you think outside of Tom Brady? What's the biggest Patriots offseason storyline? 802-655-6672. Take away Tom Brady out of the equation. The quarterback cannot be the answer here. What's the biggest non-Brady storyline?
I would say getting David Andrews back 100% healthy. I mean, I know that's way out there, but I mean, that was a huge blow. Devlin, Edelman, there's just so... And they didn't lose... They didn't go so downhill so fast because the whole team got hurt, because they didn't. They just didn't play well with the players that they still had, and a lot of them were banged up, but so was every other team. But I think the health of key players moving forward is going to make a huge difference.
You talking about for next year, the number one
story? The biggest offseason storyline not named Tom Brady is what for the Patriots?
Well, obviously, we'll see what happens, you know, with the offensive coordinator position. I mean, is that the one you're looking for?
Yes, that's fair. Yeah, 100%.
I mean, that's got to be a big one. Are they going to replace one with? What are they going to replace it with? Yeah. What kind of strategy? Something like that is what I would think.
Yeah, when I say David Andrews, obviously I'm talking about 6 or 7 guys here, but he's obviously a big one. James Devlin, and I said Edelman. But just getting these important pieces of the puzzle back at 100% to open the season.
For me, it's what Bob was kind of hinting at. It's the age of this roster. What do they do with the aging players on this roster? Are they willing to pay up one more time? Are they going to go younger and let guys walk? Are guys going to retire? And it's not just Brady. They started 11 players out of their 22 on Saturday night against the Titans. 11 of them were 30 or more in age. And Devin McCourty is someone that Bob mentioned. And, you know, Rex Burkhead is over 30. He could be cut as well. So, I mean, there's guys like that. What are they going to do with Slater? Is he going to come back? I mean, there's a bunch of players here. Patrick Chung is aging.
How do you replace those guys? Through the draft or just lesser players?
It would be through the draft or lesser free agents, but they don't have a whole lot of money. And I know I said you've got to take Brady out of this discussion, but just know you have $60 million or $50 million roughly in cap space, and the quarterback, no matter who it is going to take up some of that. So you're not going to have huge money. Man, Noy's a free agent.
By the way, Alex in Moncton said he would love to hear Rich call a Pats loss.
They'd have to constantly have the 7-second delay button.
You'd have to have smelling salt if you were doing something like that. Brady, real quick, do you want to address all the texts that we've been getting real quick?
Sure.
Because a lot of people have been texting in. We hear Tom Brady has signed a 2-year extension per the New York Times. Rich and I were out in the hallway at the break, and one of the people come up and go, my husband just texted me, Tom Brady signed a 2-year contract extension. I go, not according to me, so why don't you address that real quick?
Some of you are being duped by last August's New York Times story. So yes. Tom Brady,
someone must have retweeted it or something.
August 5th.
Tom Brady, last August, August 5th, did sign a 2-year extension, and that 2-year extension was voided at the end of the season this year, which is what it means he's going to be a free agent. So there is nothing new on the Tom Brady front. Free agency does not start until March 18th.
Right.
Tom Brady does not technically become a free agent until March 18th. So the league year ends March 18th, and that is when Brady officially hits free agency. The Patriots have exclusive negotiating rights up until March 16th, but nothing can be signed until March 18th.
And this was a New York Times story back, as you mentioned.
August 5th.
August 5th.
Yep. You know, it helps when you get these crazy things going to actually look at the date of the story.
Well, no, but there's a lot of people that have been saying that.
But the date is right there, right under the headline.
No, but we saw the date. The people that are texting us may not have seen the article. They could just hear it.
Okay.
Hey, I heard Tom Brady signed a 2-year extension. Somebody mentioned it on a radio show or on the news.
Right.
Next thing you know, it's going viral on Twitter. And once it's on Twitter, you're never getting it off. You know what I'm saying? So everybody believes Tom Brady signed, but no.
From the same place that said that wrestler was dead.
Yes, that was me. Yes.
Wrestler.
What was his name?
Ric Flair.
Ric Flair.
Oh, let him live long. 802-655-6672. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Let's go back and play again the 5 minutes from Joe Judge's intro as the New York Giants head coach. We played it in the 3 o'clock hour. I want to play it again here for the new audience. Joe Judge won the press conference in New York. Here's what he had to say.
All right, we'll get to that next. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game.
Sure, these guys love to hear themselves talk. But they also love to hear from you. Call or text at 802-655-6672 to have your opinion be heard on the Huddle 101.3 The Game.
The Huddle, 101.3 The Game. Getting along on this Thursday. So much going on. A real busy Thursday there. Brady, get to the mistake of the day.
Mistake of the day, 802-655-6672. Embroidery Works, Joanne's Uniforms, Heineberg Drive. Colchester now carrying a full line. Tactical apparel, gear for EMS workers, first responders, law enforcement, and fire and rescue from high-quality lines like True Spec Cougar Tactical. Great quality and selection at 20% off every single day. We got something real funny for you in about 10 minutes. Yeah. We're excited about this. But first, Joe Judge introduced as head coach of the New York Giants, and social media just absolutely just draping itself in compliments over Joe Judge's intro press conference with the Giants. It was in the 2 o'clock hour. We played it back in the 3 o'clock hour. We're playing it again now for the new audience. Joe Judge, 5 minutes, his opening statements to the New York Giants and their fans.
There's a question out there I'm sure a lot of people are asking. That's number one, who am I? Well, maybe I can explain that a little bit better, but instead of saying, who am I, by telling you what's relevant in this conversation with being a coach of the New York Giants, what I'm about. And what I'm about is an old school physical mentality, okay? We're going to put a product on the field that the people of this city and region will be proud of, because this team will represent this area. We'll play fast, we'll play downhill, we'll play aggressive. We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes, we'll play every play like it is a history and a life of its own, with a relentless competitive attitude. We will play fundamentally sound. We will not beat ourselves. That is our mission right here. Okay? I'm about caring for the players in the locker room. Let's not forget there's a human element to this game. Let's not think that in professional sports that paying a paycheck to somebody makes it absent of empathy. We need to make sure that we take care of the players in our locker room, that we treat them the right way, that we teach them the correct techniques, and that we put them in the right situation to be successful. We're going to ask these men to come in and give everything they have every day. We're going to demand it, and we appreciate everything they give us. It's our responsibility to take care of them on a daily basis and make sure when they are done with our game, they are better furthered for the rest of their career as a father, a husband, and a professional, whatever avenue they take. Now, what this team's going to look like, I mentioned earlier, I want this team to reflect this area. I want the people that pay their hard-earned money in the neighborhoods of New York, North Jersey, South Jersey to come to our games and know that the players on the field play with the same attitude they wake up with every morning. That is blue collar. It's hard work. It's in your face. We're not going to back down from anybody. We're going to come to work every day and grind it out the way they do in their jobs every day. And they can invest their money in our program knowing it's worthwhile. They put a Giants uniform on, they put a Giants hat or jersey on, that it's not representing just the 53 on the field, but it's representing their neighborhoods, their communities, and their families with the values they have instilled in their children. Now, at this moment, my priorities are pretty simple. I have an outsider's view of this team. I've competed against the Giants. I've studied this team from the outside looking in, preparing myself for this job and opportunity. But I have to make myself fluent in a language within the building. I have to study the players. I have to evaluate the current coaching staff and give everybody a fair evaluation to make sure we make the right decisions, that I have a clear vision of what the path going forward needs to be to help these players progress the correct way. Relative to staff, I do not have a staff in place. Yes, I have some names in mind. But we will talk to everybody. We will take our time. My priority is to put the right men around these players that they can come to work every day. They can be coached hard. They can be taught. I want good people. Before anything, if you're going to work in an organization, you're a good person. I don't want any alternative agendas. I'm making that clear right now. There's not going to be a coach in our organization who has nothing but the best interest of the players at hand and isn't going to come to work every day and put their butt on the line for the guys who are going to work hard for them. All right? And I want teachers, not presenters. I don't want someone who looks fancy in front of a screen and can sell you with a lot of different sales lines. I want teachers. I want old school people who can get to our players and give them the mental image of what it's supposed to look like. And I want them to demonstrate on a daily basis the work ethic of what it's going to take to do it successfully day in and day out. Because over the course of 6 months of this season, it takes day in and day out to be successful. The margins of error in this league are too small. You cannot get by with some kind of magic scheme or new gimmick or think you've reinvented the wheel. The same things win football games that have always won football games. It's fundamentals. And those fundamentals will start for us in the classroom. They'll start with being in meetings on time. They'll start with being on the field on time in the proper dress. They'll start with knowing your playbook. They'll start with being out there and stretching the right way and warming your body up the right way that you prevent any kind of soft tissue injuries on the field. And then they're carry over to the fundamentals on the field. It's running, it's tackling, it's ball security, okay? It's a contact sport, you can't get around that. It's meant to be a physical game. It's for tough people. We will practice with a physical attitude. We will practice in pads. We will practice live tackling. Not to make a statement that we're trying to be tough, we're gonna practice live tackling because I believe in doing it safely. You wanna make your players safer? You start by instructing them how to do it. And we're going to work on everything we do. And everything we ask them to do at full speed on Sunday at a competitive level, we're going to make sure that we have practiced, corrected, and repracticed before they have to do it at a live pace. Okay? There's not going to be shortcuts to what we have to do. It's a tough division. It's a tough division in cities full of tough people. And they expect to see a program. They expect to see a product that represents them. And I'm going to do everything in my power every day to make sure the people of this city and this area turn on the TV or sit in the stadium seats and are proud to say that we're their New York Giants.
So that's Joe Judge, wow. New Giants head coach, the first 5 minutes. Jeez. So that's his entire opening monologue.
Sounds like a politician.
And then he took questions. Arnie, you hated this hire earlier in the week.
I'm still going to say that. It's not a starter job. I do like the speech. Though, this city expects, I'm like, what, was there some major disaster in New York City? And he's like the mayor going, this city's going to get more. Look, he knows the coach speak well. Obviously, he's got that down. You'll throw this all out the window tomorrow when we forget about what he said. And we get started with, you know, all the, who's the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, some of the moves he makes. And then we'll wait till he gets the team out on the field. But we won't remember the speech once the play starts going
on. And we won't remember it if they start out 1-4 again.
No, we won't.
And then that's going to be the job of him and the people, more importantly, that he surrounds himself with. John Mara, the owner of the Giants, called it probably the most impressive interview he's ever done. You noticed all of a sudden this guy comes out of nowhere and he's named the coach like a day later.
You say it's impressive, and so does Brady, but Chris says the Giants have to make the doors wider so this guy can get his head through. What a gas bag.
Wow, so you're not the only gas bag.
Oh, look at that. Huh?
No, I liked it.
I did too.
The biggest thing, look, he said all the right things. The people in the New York media are all loving him right now, and I think they should be. He preached toughness. He preached accountability. He preached fundamentals. He preached discipline. These are all things that the Giants have lacked either on or off the field for the last couple of years under Ben McAdoo and to some degree Pat Shurmur. When you look at guys like OBJ and some of the off-field stuff, when we look at Janoris Jenkins on-field in the locker room, all of that is important.
Do you think this guy's attitude would have related well to OBJ, though?
No, I don't. I think the biggest thing that's going to hold Joe Judge back maybe is too strong, but the biggest thing he needs to do is get to the veteran players. The young players are going to buy in because they want to become starters. They want to get contracts. They want to have big roles on the team. Young players are sponges. They'll buy in. But can the veteran player, the guy who's been through the league 7 years, 8 years, who's already won a Super Bowl if the Giants have one, they have one in Golden Tate, if they get others, will that guy be okay with tackling during practice? Will that guy be okay with the demanding nature that Joe Judge puts on his staff? He's got to get the buy-in from them. Because if it ends up being
clicky, where it's the young guys who buy in against the grizzled veterans who don't, you're going to end up with a bad locker room dynamic. That's what he has to offset, because the Patriots, where he's coming from, McCourty, Brady, Matthew Slater, they buy into that, and it filters down. Right. He can't have it be a division.
No, he needs to go right in and have one-on-one meetings with every one of these people. I don't care if it's tomorrow or the day before the season starts, but at some point he needs to go into the Golden Tates of the world. The good thing is, though, there's a lot more of them. As you said, half the Patriots roster in that game last Saturday night were 30 or older. That is not the case with the Giants. You got Golden Tate and a couple others, but not too many.
You know,
so I don't know. I look at this guy jumping on a young team, and I feel better than him jumping into an older team.
Some New Yorkers will say, talk is cheap. Show us on the field. You could say, you know, you could have a good speech and, you know, till the cows come home, but we want to see it on the football field. We're tired of the, you know, let's run through the wall and we're going to practice and tackle and okay, that's great and all. Are you 1-0 yet? That's all we really care about. Did you win? That's all that matters.
It sounds very collegiate to me. It sounds like I'm the guy who's going to run everything. We're going to get everybody underneath me pulling in the same direction. There's a lot of cliches, and I've even got a montage we can play tomorrow of the Joe Judge cliches already out of the press conference.
Sure.
You're going to need...
It's quick.
It's going to... It's collegiate in the way that his mindset is. He's going to need the same kind of buy-in where you have the captains at the top who filter it on down.
I wonder if he's going to get coordinators with a lot more experience than him. You know what I mean? We already heard about Jason Garrett and stuff like that. Since he doesn't have the experience, Wade Phillips, you know, get those type of guys to off-balance what he doesn't know, I guess.
I'd certainly be fine with that, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I'm okay with, look, I like Garrett. I'm okay with Freddie Kitchens. I'm okay with somebody else. I just want somebody who can get the best out of Daniel Jones.
All right, 802-655-6672. If you want to go ahead and jump on in, Brady, what do we got coming up next?
So usually we do the four-minute football fix. Today we're switching it up.
I'll say.
Part-time Aaron got his wisdom teeth out today. He sent me a video. We're going to play a game. Can anybody understand what part-time Aaron is saying? Because it's pretty tough.
We'll get to that. And last story standing, that's coming up next. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game.
Get the latest NFL headlines.
We got to be better on third downs. We got to stay on the field.
A huge emphasis for us to make sure rush, pressure, the whole thing, that we can affect the quarterback.
Got our hands on some balls, so that was, it was good too.
And it's just, making sure fundamentally we're sound in all aspects of the game.
This is your home for the gridiron.
101.3 The Game.
All right, good evening, everyone. You're in the huddle, 101.3 The Game. Now time for He Said What? Didn't we do that before? They Said What?
Yeah, this is a different kind of They Said What.
And the difference with this one is you can't understand a thing he is
said
saying.
What? All right, let's get to that.
So part-time Aaron got his wisdom teeth out. So he comes out of the... So I texted him good luck earlier. He comes out of the dentist's office, or the orthosurgeon's office, and is... He's under laughing gas, I think. He's got a little bit of laughing gas. He's got anesthesia. No laughing gas. He just had anesthesia, and he had all kinds of gauze in his mouth and things like that.
He looks like he just got run over by a football player. Yeah,
like
high speed.
Chipmunk is what he looks like.
He sent me a video. He says there's no laughing gas, but I don't know that I believe it based on how his face looked in this. I'm going to play the whole 30 seconds, and then we have it cut by cut. We're going to play a little game. Can anybody understand what part-time Aaron is actually saying? Mainly you guys, but here's the whole video.
Oh, well, here's to my faith, though. Probably from bad work, but probably made sorry, so sorry for making you do that. You probably can't understand what I'm saying. That's all right. Anyway, this was for, see ya.
The only thing I understood in that whole sentence was, you probably can't understand what I'm saying.
Oh, the only thing he'll understand is why he's taking a sick day right off the bat when he just started working. I can't believe that, but go ahead.
All right, here's the first sentence. I'll give you first crack at it. Can you understand this sentence?
Well, here's to my faithful.
Well, here's to my faithful?
Okay, that's your guess. What's your guess? Do you want to play it again?
Oh, well, yeah, please.
Oh, well, here's to my faith, though.
Hello? Here's to my... it's got to be faithful.
I thought that's what he said.
Or face.
Oh, well, here's to my faith, though.
adheres to my faith, though. This is like trying to decipher rock and roll lyrics.
Town Fair Tire text line 802-655-6672. Do you want to take a guess at it? I'll play it one more time
Your
for you guys.
Your voice is low. Turn, I don't know. Maybe I can't hear it. Turn me
no,
up.
It's,
yeah.
It's
go ahead. All right, go ahead.
Oh, well, here's to your faith, though.
So people on the Top Fair Tire text line said, hello, I can't feel my face, though. Can't feel my face. I can't feel my face.
I'm pretty sure it's went well. Can't feel my face. I don't think it's hello. I think it's went well.
Okay, hear it again.
Oh, well, yeah, here's to your faith, though.
Okay. Yeah, I think maybe you're right. Done. Maybe it went well.
I think it's went well.
I can't feel my face, though.
Yes. All right. So sentence two.
Yes. All right. People on the Tougher Tire text line agree with that.
Pardon me from Bradford, but probably brave fire. So sorry for making you do that.
Now, that's a longer sentence.
Yes. Yeah, something about coming back to work, but I couldn't. And I'm
all right.
Sorry.
So here, hold on.
Yeah. Okay. Pardon me from Bradford, but sorry for making you do that.
Oh, man. Yeah, right. I was too short in the middle.
I'm going to play the first part of the sentence.
Pardon me from Bradford, but
okay, how about
something
that?
Come back to work.
It sounds I'm trying to decipher the lyrics to a Pearl Jam song with Eddie Vedder singing.
Can you play it backwards?
here. First part of the sentence.
I am the devil.
Here.
Pardon me from Bradford, but
hopefully coming back to work?
That's your guess?
Yeah.
Do you have it, Arnie?
Shane says, I would come back to work, but tell Brady I'm sorry.
Sorry for making you do that.
Sorry for making you
do that. We heard that part. Yeah.
So the answer to this one, because I know all of these now, I'm pretty sure. So here's the whole sentence. Hold on. That's the beginning. Here we go.
Someone says,
sorry for making you do that.
Probably something.
So he says, pumped to come back to work, though.
To come back to work.
But I probably won't make it Saturday. Sorry for making you do that, because I'm filling in for him on Sports Saturday.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable.
So here.
Pumped
to come back to work.
Pumped me from Bradford, but sorry for making you do that.
Probably won't be ready for Saturday.
How'd you like to do a talk show with that voice?
Oh,
so
that's how I thought you were going to sound when you went to the dentist that first day.
How about this one?
You probably can't understand what I'm saying. That's all right.
Probably can't understand what I'm saying, but that's all right.
There you go. Boom. You got that one.
That was the easy part.
Yeah. All right. How about the last one? This one's tougher. How about the last one?
This was the fourth. See ya.
See ya.
This is at the fort. See ya.
I didn't hear the beginning part.
This is the fort. See ya.
This is the fort. It sounds like Friday night.
Yeah, I'll try one more.
Sounds like he's boozing it up.
I'll try one more.
This is the fort. See ya.
I'll have a double shot and see ya.
Tap for Tire Text Line 802-655.
I got nothing on that last line.
655-6672. If anybody wants to get a last guess in before I give the answer.
I just can't believe he didn't come to work today. I'm shocked.
This is a four. See ya.
Anyway, thanks for the support.
Well, we're not supporting you.
Yeah,
that's what he's saying.
So there you go. Aaron is done at the oral surgeon. His wisdom teeth are gone.
Was this before or after? No, I'm just kidding.
And now it's time for Last Story Standing.
All right, Last Story Standing.
Wacky or insightful? We've saved the best for last. It's time for Last Story Standing on The Huddle on 101.3 The Game.
Some people did get this, by the way.
Wow.
And Andrew in Richmond says, man, that was awesome. Need more of that. Aaron, get new wisdom teeth tomorrow. We'll take them out again.
That'd be great. That's probably from the infection in his mouth. By the way, Last Story Standing, powered by Vitel Wireless, voted the fastest internet provider in Vermont with internet plans starting at $10 per month with no contract required. VitelWireless.com. Two men from Mississippi won $100,000 from a scratch-off lottery. That'd be nice. Those same two men from Mississippi were arrested on Monday after being accused of trying to cash in a forged $100,000 lottery ticket.
How do you forge it? You either won or you didn't.
Well, funny you mention that. Two guys, Otis Latham and Russell Sparks.
Otis.
48 went in to claim their winning tickets. It ended up being a counterfeit ticket. What they did was, the industry calls this a cut and paste. They cut out certain numbers. It was visibly a fraud. We scanned the front and the side, he added, stressing there's multiple ways to test a ticket's legitimacy, including a barcode and serial number checks. They glued the winning numbers in to make it sound like they won. So that's what happened there. What do we got on the radio?
Bruins and Celtics both tonight. Winnipeg at Bruins, 6:30 pregame on 101.3 The Game. The Celtics, tough one tonight after that bad game last night against San Antonio. They're at Philadelphia pregame in a half hour on 960 The Zone.
Interns, who do we have today?
Not Aaron.
Intern Danny.
No, not Aaron.
Intern Danny, intern Lorette was here.
Yeah.
And we had part-time Aaron who's on the mend.
Yeah, get back to work immediately. Shame on you for being out. Everybody have a good night. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you tomorrow. See ya.